everybody, and welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race Season 11 recap here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. My name is Mike Bloom, back again to talk about more RuPaul's Drag Race Season 11. It's been a couple of weeks. I have had so much fun getting to listen to Rockstar and Ali Lasher on the past couple of weeks as the audience lets out a collective groan hearing my voice at the top of the podcast here. But let me welcome in the two constants that have done such a great job the past couple weeks talking through this season of Drag Race, our trampy trick-or-treaters for this installment of the RuCap. First, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm great. Much like Ariel Versace, I live in a 90s Nickelodeon place, and I'm kind of okay with that.
So you're just wearing the same thing to every podcast you record then?
Yeah, exactly. It definitely works for me.
And, of course, we would not be here without Mr. Brent Wolgamott. Brent, how are you?
I'm doing great. Yes, it's me, Brent, the fake Mike Bloom. Oh, my God. Yeah, I never realized that was her catchphrase before until I heard it 5,000 times in this episode.
Yeah, it was interspersed throughout the first episodes, but the only reason that I noticed is because I knew it from before from following her on Instagram. Okay. But yeah, it got emphasized, shall we say, this episode.
That's the thing. That's how you know when you're not doing a bad job or that your catchphrase is bad, when people don't know it's a catchphrase until your boot episode.
How did we spell that? Is it like apostrophe N-Y-E-S?
That's how I'm seeing it. Yeah, it's like a combination of no and yes. Like, yes.
Oh. I hate that. It's one of my pet peeves when people say, yeah, no. Because what are you trying to emphasize there? What's the point of you saying that? You could have just cut off one word from that. So essentially, Ariel's just doing that version of it.
Yes. Does it mean yes, though? Or does it mean yeah, no? Which I don't know what that means either. Yeah.
Yes.
You have to do the peace fingers by the eyes, too.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. Oh, I hate the peace fingers. I hate the peace fingers. Oh, my
Listen,
God.
Ross asked Ariel what her legacy to drag would be. I think we stumbled upon that answer in the first 2 minutes of this podcast.
Yes.
Well, let's get into this episode because it is our ball challenge. We have 33 looks to talk through. So suffice it to say, especially given our three gregarious asses, there's going to be a lot to talk through. I want to start at the beginning of this episode because I know you guys talked about this last week. Why is Rue highlighting Scarlett's casting choices? We are slowly filling out like the drag queen behind the scenes production staff with Alexis Michelle, the producer, Monique Hart, the director. Now we have Scarlett Envy, the casting director. And it turns out the reason why it was underlined so much, even in the previously on for this episode, is because Scarlett is sort of basking in that compliment that Rue gave her, which prompts a bunch of eye rolls from Ariel. Liana, what are you thinking about this edit that Scarlett is getting? I mean, are we in like complete Scarlett is delusional territory with this type of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I think of it. I mean, what is it that the editors are trying to tell us? And I think that they would only have included this and then the stuff during the episode with her outfit with all the holes because she was a creature from the Black Lagoon. And also you have the stuff, remember, from the very first design challenge where she had that, you know, hat, floopy floppy hat. And then the red outfit that also had holes in it. So I'm expecting some sort of downfall for her. I'm just waiting for that to come.
I'm not sure what to think of it, actually. I was just like, it seemed like some fake drama just to give Ariel something to say during her boot episode. Although, to be fair, they've never had trouble giving her something to say before. I'm going to be like, you know, honest right from the start. We had talked in our little group message about, you know, I said I disagreed heavily with the judging in this episode, and the person who I disagreed with it the most is Scarlett. I felt not only that she should have been in the top, but I really did feel like she should have been the winner of this challenge. So I don't know what they're trying to say with this, you know, shading Scarlett from behind, because, you know, they saw, you know, there's one person on the show that the show isn't going to shade, and that's RuPaul. And so they showed RuPaul specifically. And again, Ru may do stuff like this all the time, but they just never show it. So, but they specifically showed her saying, great job casting. Scarlett gets a moment to bask in her glory. Then they tried to like do this fake out during the episode where, you know, you're seeing her walk around and living for her gig. But then she ends up safe. Like she wasn't even in the bottom or anything. She was safe. So I don't know. What was the point of it all?
I'm a little confused by it as well, just because if you're looking at this overall arc of things, you know, Scarlett got this similar type of thing in episode 2, where it's not necessarily her being like, I'm so proud because Rue made this spare comment towards me, but it's her saying like, how dare they pick me last? They're going to, you know, rue the choice that they made. And they did. She ended up winning the challenge. So it's not like this is going to be a thing where every time she says something, the exact opposite happens and she has to eat her words. So I'm a little confused by it all. I'm enjoying what Scarlett's putting out there. We can definitely talk about it. I do agree with you, Brett. I don't know if I would put her as the winner of the challenge, but I would definitely put her up there at least top 4 or 5 with a couple of particular looks. But I just thought it was an interesting pin to put on the overall arc of Scarlett Envy. And like you said, Ariel's reactions to her, you know, she doesn't save the shade entirely for Silky. She's spreading it around a bit.
Yeah, and I agree with that as well. By the way, I also want to say I do enjoy the editing in this particular season. I think it is probably a different set of editors, and there's different things to like and different things to dislike. The things that I like the most are I'm sort of befuddled by some of the editing choices, but on the other hand, I like it that keeps me on my toes. Like, I can't predict things necessarily, especially in the lip sync for your lives. Like, I have no idea who the hell is going to win those half the time, and I sort of like that I don't get the behind-the-scenes queens confessionals of, oh, this bitch is slaying it, oh, this bitch is having problems, to tell me what my eyes are telling me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, show don't tell.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, that's a really interesting comment, because I'm thinking back to the judging, and I don't know if this is like this episode in particular, and I didn't necessarily agree with some of the judging, but I don't remember seeing the faces. You know, when a queen walks down the runway and it's not, they're going to be in the bottom because it's not a good look, they'll cut to one of the judges giving the frowny face. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that many frowny faces or happy faces. So when they were going to do the tops and bottoms, I was really like, I had my guesses, but I had absolutely no idea, where I feel like in previous seasons or in previous, I don't even know this season, but in previous seasons, I've been able to identify who was going to be in the top and who's going to be on the bottom kind of based on those cues. So that's pretty interesting. I didn't notice that till that you pointed it out.
So the other big thing from this post lip sync debrief is the reopening of the wounds for Evie Oddly and Raja O'Hara. I am so torn about Raja because she's put out some interesting things. At least I thought her orange look last week was really, really fun. And she did a couple of interesting things this episode. I'm not exactly wowed by her from a challenge perspective. I do agree with Evie from that perspective of, listen, you can try to be like a Coco Montrese, Cameron Michaels, all you want to, and be a lip sync assassin. But at the end of the day, I don't know how much Rue is going to necessarily respect that when it comes to crowning a winner. But I got to say, Raja might be in my top 2 or top 3 queens when it comes to confessionals. I don't know what it is, but I cannot get enough of her talking heads. Her and Akiria, in my opinion, are my top 2. Liana, what are your thoughts about this Raja Evie round 2 showdown?
I don't know. I mean, I kind of like didn't really care all that much. The biggest thing that I took away from this was, so Evie smells, and I feel like this is something that we've heard before. So I really want to know if it's like a deodorant problem, a bathing problem. I think that goes to Raja's excellence in the confessionals, Mike, like you were talking about. The way that she just describes it and talks about it is so funny. So that was the biggest thing that stood out to me. I don't know. It felt like Evie has this very specific point of view and she's going to defend it kind of regardless. And so Raja was sort of challenging that, and Evie's not afraid to step up and talk about it. But overall, yeah, the bitch, I'm not from Denver, I'm from Dallas, that line, oh girl, loved it. Although I'm from Denver, not from Dallas, so I like flip those.
Yeah, you're from the little D, Liana, not the big D.
I know.
there's no such thing as the little D. We don't like that. I have to tell you, I have the opposite reaction here. I don't care for Raja at all. And I don't know, it's because she looks like freaking Steve Urkel. but like, it, to me, it seems like a whole lot of talk and not a whole lot of action. Again, show me, not tell me. And even the stuff that she's telling me, I didn't even care for. The fact that she's going for, like Liana brings it up, the fact that she talks about Evie smelling and that she's trash. It's like her reads are so basic that I really just want to slap her. Like, girl, that's all you got? Like, really, you're going for something as basic and as mean as, oh, she smells and, oh, she's trash, like she didn't have money. I swear I heard the same things on season 4 with Sherry Needles, people saying she smells, people saying she doesn't have money, that her drag is trash, and you saw what happened with there. So I think it's same story, different cast.
Yeah, but that's why Raja is entertaining. Like, I'm excited for her downfall. It's always good to have a fun villain. I mean, also because I haven't been super impressed, but But yeah, I mean, I agree with you in the sense that I think that it's a lot of talk and no action, which is what Evie was getting at, right? Like, oh, okay, well, you say you're going to bring it, you say you're going to bring it, but bring it, you know? Like, okay, yeah, you want to lip sync, but we want to see you bring in the challenge. So yeah, no, I get that. But the booty hole comment later is really what I think of. Yes. I think of Raja's, like, good confessionals.
Yeah, well, the thing with Evie is that I feel like Evie is the voice of the audience. Like, anytime, and we hear this every freaking season, some queen say something about, I'm going to lip sync my way all the way down the, you know, Manhattan Boulevard or whatever. Girl, nobody wants to hear that. That means you're doing shitty television. If you're having to lip sync every episode, that means you aren't putting that in the challenges. Evie is speaking for the audience when she says, girl, you need to put that energy that you're putting into the lip syncs and put that into the challenge, because even if you make it all the way to the end, RuPaul is going to crown your ass. And of course, Raja's not here for it. Now, I will say that Evie's timing is a little bit suspect. Like, we all know that that's just something people say to make themselves feel better. But I feel like Evie's just not here for the bullshit. And, you know, as someone who also isn't here for the bullshit, I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah, I do think, I agree. I think the sentiment's correct. I do think the timing's a bit weird that, you know, she survived, and albeit, as you guys talked about last week, I think she clearly slayed Mercedes in that lip sync, but still, she had a brush with drag death there, and it might not have been the best opportunity to approach her and say, like, I know you're trying to cope right now, but really you need a harsh slap of reality. But, you know, that's Evie's MO, and so, you know, I can understand where she's coming from.
I wanted to ask you really quickly, were you with Allie and me in that you were hoping for a double boot or thinking it was going to be a double boot when her wig came off last time?
We didn't even talk about this. Like, yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing because if you have a double boot now, that probably means we're going to have a double Shantae near the end of the season. And I really don't like those. And so it's just like, you know, it's like pick your poison. Which would you rather have? For what it's worth, I do think Raja did a good enough performance, wig mishap aside, to at least stay her execution a little bit. And she'll survive this episode. I don't know if she's going to be long for the game in the next couple of episodes. I could see it happen, but it's not as egregious for me as the, you know, the Honey Mahogany, Vivian Panay, was it Baby One More Time, I think, when they both screwed it up. This did not feel like a royal screw up on both ends outside of like one major thing that happened to Raja. I feel like she did a good job otherwise.
Excellent. And one more thing, because I know the audience is wondering this. How did you like my imitation of your...
Hi! It was good. Look, it's no yes, but I think you got to pitch a little bit further upwards. You got to hold your nose when you do it to mimic my nasalness. But
yes,
I think it was good. The seat's nice and warm, Brent. You kept it nice and warm for me. So I really do appreciate you taking the helm over the past couple of weeks.
Thank you. I wasn't fishing for compliments at all. Never.
Well, let's get to the next day. Let's keep those good vibes going, because I am here to say, give me the t-shirts, people. I am 100% in on Brangy. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I love them both, or the fact that I'm so excited by the newness of there being like a legit showmance on Drag Race. The last time we sort of saw this was when Jinx was crushing on Ivy Winters back in season 5. But I don't know. I'm loving all the scenes they get together. Liana, I know you sort of echoed the sentiments last week. Now that this has become more of the forefront in terms of the storylines, do you have any changed feelings about it?
I just want to know how it works. Do they get to see each other? No, I don't need that type of explanation. My mom gave me the birds and the bees. We're good. No,
they've been like pretty prudent on social media in the past week. Now that like it's officially out, I think there was some talk about like, you know, Brooke saying like, don't assume I'm the bottom, you know, just like a lot of flirting back and forth and poking each other back and forth on social media.
But like, I don't think that they're not together now. I mean, I think that this was sort of a coupling that happened as a result of the support that you might need on the show, right? I mean,
they were in prison.
Yeah,
they were in prison together. Mm-hmm. I really doubt, and maybe I'm speaking out of school here, but I really doubt that. I know I can count on one hand the number of drag queens I know that would kai with another drag queen. I mean, that would make it like I'm going to get into a relationship with them. Maybe I don't know enough drag queens. I'm sure there are people out there who are screaming, Brent, you know, I know plenty of drag queens who would kai with another drag queen. Fine. But I feel like most drag queens would like someone who does not do what they do. So the fact that this is happening, I feel like it's, number one, they're two awesome people who I love. Number two, they're like, it's like they're in prison together. Again, they can't, they have no phones, no social media. They don't have any friends. They can't see anybody. They're stuck there. And at night they go home to their hotels. They're in the wild or in the prison. They got needs, Mike, is what I'm saying. They got base needs. And I think that's really all this is about. Maybe I'm off.
Okay, that's my question, though. In the hotel at night, can they sleep with each other? That's what I want to know. Yes, that's what I want to know. Or are they kept apart?
No, I feel like producers want to bottle it up so they can capture as much on camera as possible. You know, they don't want to let stuff go on behind the scenes that they have to talk about later on and have people, you know, sort of try to pry information out of them in confessional. But Brent, I totally see your point. That's why we see, particularly with Big Brother, especially as of late, all these types of hookups going on is just because, like, you're trapped in a central location with a set number of people of the gender that you're attracted to. And so if you're single, you don't have many pickings and you have needs that you need to imbibe. That's why Naomi Smalls was trying to mac on that backup dancer in the All-Stars 4 finale. So I think it's understandable and frankly a little surprising that it took this long for this type of thing to happen.
Yes, exactly. By the way, I don't necessarily agree with you, though. I don't enjoy being hit over the head as RuPaul's Drag Race does. That's one thing the editors are consistent about, is hitting us the hell over the head with something 1,000 times to let us know that something's happening. Yeah, I got it. They're hooking up behind the scenes, and it's really cute and really fun. I'd like to hear more from the queens, though. So I really hope that this doesn't continue to be such a big thing. But on the other hand, I have to deal with so many, like, you know, showmances on other reality shows. I suppose I can put up with that on Big Brother as well.
Well, Brent, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it seems like we have another showmance coming as well. Silky and Nina West. I mean, the sparks were flying.
Oh, my God. Nina looked so uncomfortable.
The most uncomfortable was Plastique. Plastique looked like she was going to crawl off the set.
I didn't understand what the problem was. I'd kiss Silky. I would French kiss Silky. Like, what the hell?
I thought it was kind of hot, actually, like, because they were getting into it, too.
They were acting like Silky was the creature from the Black Lagoon or something. I'm like, come on, just, like, have some fun here. Like, I don't know. A little judgy for me. Whatever.
Well, let's get into this challenge here, this mini challenge. And it's to create a BFF doll for, hey, the RuPaul doll, as we, I think it was, what, like, we figured out it was, like, $168 retail value. Now that it's on the market, we don't know if that went down yet. But they're shilling it out again. And to accompany Ru in this challenge is the one and only Backwoods Barbie of RuPaul's Drag Race, Trixie Mattel. Brent, I just want to hear what your inner monologue was when you saw Trixie come back on screen.
Again, seriously, like, I think what's happening here, Ru would clearly have Shangela back, but she's too busy, you know, making performances for Beyonce and getting awards here and there and having movies, whereas Trixie's, like, $100,000 is already gone by now, I guess. I enjoy Trixie. She's fine, but I didn't need to see her in this episode. I don't know why she was there. She didn't have anything to do. She wasn't part of the challenge. She gave a few snarky pre-written asides. Like, I really felt like they were pre-written when she was walking through the workroom. It's a no for me.
It's a no for me, dog. I just imagine that RuPaul keeps Trixie Mattel in a box in the basement.
In her like mint condition box, like a
doll. Exactly. And then just like brings her out when they need somebody to maybe deliver those lines. Although I think she came up with those just because that's Trixie's humor. Like, it does sound a little canned.
It's so funny too. But I have to tell you, Leona, like when Trixie first came on RuPaul's Drag Race, the first time I saw Trixie, I was like, number one, I would totally mac that because Trixie as a boy is very, very cute. Although as time has gone on, she's lost more and more hair. And two, I love her kind of drag because I like that sort of, you know, paint for the cheap seats in the back kind of paint where it doesn't look real at all. She looks like a clown. It's the Bianca Del Rio of it all. And I was here for it. So when she was eliminated, like I think in episode 4, against what's her face?
Pearl.
Pearl, thank you. Yes, I could see her, but I couldn't remember. Pearl.
You can see her.
When she was eliminated against Pearl, I was a little down. And then when she came back, I was here for it. I was rooting for Trixie. But my God, like, when she came back for All Stars, I was like, oh, I just don't really care for your drag anymore. And then when she won, it just made it that much more. It's like, I like you up until you win, and then I'm not into you. Sort of like what happened with Big Brother Canada and Paris, where I, you know, bought Paris stock. I was the winner in the stock market in the Paris stock. I had Paris number one in my draft. She ends up winning, and now she's blocked me on social media. What can I do, Mike? Come on. Help me here, for God's sake.
Oh, boy. Well, I don't know if I can help you with that particular issue. I love Trixie. I thought that, yes, maybe what she came in was a bit pre-planned. You know, I think I do always love the you want to be nice to everyone because you never know when it'll come down to a jury vote. Was it reminiscent of what she talked about in the Holly Slay Spectacular? Absolutely. But I still think it's a funny line, and I do love how she does steer into the curve with all the shenanigans that were going down. I will say one line that I really liked that was definitely not scripted was her approaching Evie, who once again was pink head to toe, and asked why RuPaul would want to crown a crash test dummy, which Evie had a great response in saying, have you seen the people that she crowned? And again, if we're putting another feather in the cap of why I think, I'm even going to go further than the what you put out there, Brent, last week. I honestly think this is Evie Oddly's competition to lose at this point. I think we're possibly looking at another season 6 or 8 scenario. I might eat my words later on, but it seems like another feather in the cap for Evie Oddly is that she is witty with those comebacks on the runway and here as well. And we know that RuPaul loves a well-spoken bitch. And I feel like this is a nice microcosm of that.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be too you know, reactionary as far as the episode goes, but I didn't like the fact that, because I said it was either Silky or Evie. That's what I've said. And I still do believe that. But I didn't love the fact, Liana, that Silky said, I got one mug. I paint one mug. And I'm like, oh, RuPaul doesn't like when you're in a box. Like, she likes people who are funny and interesting and wow her. And that's what we can get to it. But that's the whole reason Evie was out on the stage, was because even though the last look was absolutely ghastly in a bad way, the first two looks were really something that RuPaul responded positively to and loved, and was like, she wasn't bored by, she's never bored by Evie Oddly. And I do feel like she could get bored by Dr. Ganache eventually. So yeah, I'm with you, Mike. I do think that this is Evie's to lose.
Yeah, I think Silky is starting to become one note, right? Like, she comes in as really big personality, but then that big personality is now starting to get repetitive. And I could not believe, I was like, why would you say that? Do not say that you can only paint one mug. Like, say that, you know, I don't know, you're trying to do something that really fit the, I don't know, whatever. Or just don't say anything at all. Just suck it up, listen to the judges, because I always hate it when the queens really try to talk back. But anyway, I absolutely co-signed. And I think the fact that Evie was in the top, because I will talk about how I feel about her looks, I think also shows that the judges and RuPaul really love her.
Yeah, and before we move on, I just want to, I want to admit that I think I changed my tune a smidge on Silky when I very contentiously said that I was quote unquote out on her a few weeks ago. Well, it's just that I personally think, you know, I said before that I'm not able to separate the person from on screen from the person off screen. Now that I've had a few weeks, I've been able to do so a bit more. And I think either she's calmed down or the edit has calmed her down. She has grown on me as a television character in the past few weeks. Does that excuse the stuff that she's being accused of off screen? No, not whatsoever. But I can still enjoy Silky the TV character. And of course, I say this with all irony, as this turns out to be, I would say, probably her worst episode so far.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I can appreciate when Silky does good work on the show. I think that it's a little hit or miss for me. Like, I will say I absolutely loved her Oprah. But then when she comes out as the Wiz still doing Oprah, I was like, hey, wait a second. Like, I don't like that necessarily. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Silky, because I think that, you know, how heard RuPaul's relationship evolves. If RuPaul does get bored with her, if Silky is able to change it up and still sort of put herself in the front runner or one of the front runner contentions, like, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting ride.
I think she's going to be fine. I think she's going to make the top four or whatever they have at the end here. I think they've already had two design challenges. I don't see another one coming. I think everything else is going to be pretty much performative at this point. So I do think that Silky probably has the inside track to the top four. But as I said, Evie is the favorite to win.
All right, well, let's get into it. We have an actual mini challenge to talk through. And
do we? Was there anything here? Okay, go ahead.
I actually really like this one. And I think it's because I thought last week's, I agree with you that I think it was, I mean, it was like it was a Big Brother Canada challenge. You know, it was read the teleprompter. It's not necessarily evocative of drag, no matter how much they sort of drag the definition out in this show. But I gotta say, I really like this. This is reminiscent of some of those mini challenges. The, you know, the origin of Pound Cake came from this type of challenge of like create your own blank and showcase it. So I enjoyed a lot of the choices that were made here, and especially the descriptions that they wrote up. Liana, any particular highlights or lowlights that stuck out from you from this Valley of the Dolls?
Okay, so Nina actually looked decent. And I was like, wait, is this her normal drag? Like, she looked like her in drag. And I was like, I don't know if this is a read or this is a compliment. Because it means you can do your normal drag look in 30 minutes or you can do your normal drag look in 30 minutes. And I think for me, I really liked Scarlett's facial expressions really made me laugh. She was like not concerned about being pretty. It was just ridiculously stupid and silly. And I thought Brooklyn did the Bachelorette Party Girl, I think. That one that made me laugh as well. So it was good. I mean, it was fun. It was stupid. It was fun, but
it was stupid and fun. Exactly. I can't remember anything about this. Like, honestly, I'm here to talk about the ball. I couldn't even remember. Like when you said some of the mini challenge, I'm like, oh yeah, they did do that. Like they stood on that like rotating platform and stood still basically while RuPaul like gave their description that they pre-wrote. Like this was terrible to me. I didn't like it. I can't even remember who won. Who won, Mike?
Roger O'Hara, Dick. But can I ask why did you feel it was terrible?
Well, it just was boring. Like, I don't like it when the queens don't have anything to do. And I don't feel like that they had much to do here. And I don't like quick drag when it's utilized in this way. So, it was a miss for me.
I thought they were doing stuff. Maybe it's because they weren't moving around, that they were literally standing still. But I thought there was a lot to do here. They had to pick looks. They had to pick characters. They had to write stuff out. Granted, it was in a short time frame, so we didn't necessarily see the creative process behind it, but I don't know. I personally really enjoyed it, specifically the choices that were being made. I agree with you, Liana. I loved Brooke's Bachelorette Brandy. The specificities were really great. Akiria, I don't know why this is the season of one-armed characters between Plastique in Why Gotta Be Black Panther and now her inmate 304 with, I didn't even notice she had one arm until they pointed it out. I totally agree about stupid Scarlett's crossed eyes. Silky had me going with Sticky Fingers Silky, particularly when she opened up her dress and it revealed all the chip bags that were taped to it, of course, with their labels covered. But of course, we have a great moment here of Vanjie being Vanjie. First, a really great another Trixie moment was Vanjie's like, Brooklyn, I'm coming, or Trixie, I'm coming for your gig, girl. And Trixie says, oh yeah, I have a broken suitcase too. And Vanjie's doll pose, where it looks like she's like, she shrugs her shoulders and just sort of stays there for a second. And it's very awkward laughter because it might be one of the worst doll poses I've ever seen. It's yet another reason why we love her. Roger O'Hara ends up winning this one. I mean, I don't think there's any specific criteria for it. I would say maybe the one reason why she did win, she really didn't get an advantage out of it. But I think the reason why she won is because if you're looking for a doll to actually pair with RuPaul's, that is probably the one that appealed to RuPaul the most. You know, she has red hair. The Ru doll has blonde hair. She appeals to some of those specificities that had RuPaul cracking up. So I think while the others had good character moments, Raja's ends up appealing to Ru the most, and she needed a win. So she gets a little one here.
Yeah, well, congrats.
With just dripping with sincerity, Brent Wolgamott congratulates Roger O'Hara on her mini challenge win. Look, she gets $1,000 in ice cream. I'm totally jealous of her personally.
Oh, is that what she won? See, this is the thing. I know you're like, we're eating. Watch the episode. I did watch the episode. I watched the episode 3 damn times. But over the mini, like once I saw the mini challenge, I didn't rewatch it again. Like I've rewatched the ball 3 times and everything else that happened after, but I did not watch this part 3 times. Oh God.
Well, let's take it to the ball, to the thing that Brent has watched multiple times.
Yes.
So, second season in a row, we are bringing up our ball challenge at the final 11. And this time, we're going a little spooky with the monster ball. I have to say, this is the second time in a row that we have bumped it back to round 4 or 5 instead of, you know, the final 5 or 6. Looks like this will be a permanent change. Liana, I'm not mad at it. I'm actually, you know, we're about to talk through 33 looks, and that's a bit of a mountain to climb. But I actually really enjoy the placement of this challenge where it is now.
Yeah, so I'm of two minds because on one hand, it is 33 looks and I feel like I cannot give the appropriate time to the looks that they deserve because I was looking back at their pictures and I was like, I don't really remember these, which means that I was overloaded and there was too much. On the other hand, I loved the fact that in this episode, we got to see so much of the queens in the workroom. And I feel like that's something that has really been missing so far, because we've had so many performances. So we have to work in the girls practicing in groups, then they go to the rehearsal, then they do, you know, do the blah, 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 whatever. And so all of those things sort of take up time from just getting to see the girls in their element in the workroom. So I think that was one thing that I really appreciated. And being able to see that earlier, I think, is a benefit.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I was really happy that they ended up doing a ball for the spectacle of it all, but it does make it really hard for me to totally appreciate things that are amazing. I do feel like people end up being left out of the judging in the tops and the bottoms, specifically the tops, for people who probably deserve to be called out. I felt like there was somebody else who also deserved to be called out for something bad. So I do not like that at all. I like things when they're a little smaller, so it's a little bit more clear about who's the winner and who's the loser. I feel like when there's more queens on the stage, it leads to more judging shenanigans, and I do feel like we had a couple in this episode.
You do bring up a good point that because we had a top three and a bottom three, that left, what, five or six queens out in general. And I think they actually talk about this in Untucked, how Akiria is actually a little frustrated about basically being safe every week except for the first, because she's missing out on key feedback that they're very clearly seeking right now, where I think someone like Evie and Plastique are really benefiting from the judges seeing them every week to tell them exactly what they're thinking about them. Otherwise, they have no clue. Except for what Rue tells them. So it's an interesting, you know, pros and cons as to this choice. But we were assembling three looks for this version of the ball. Halloween has come early. We have Trampy Trick-or-Treater, Witch Please, and MILF Eleganza as our one created look. Monsters I'd Like to Freak. That's another reason why I enjoy this challenge as well. It gives them an excuse to do another design challenge early on. So we don't have too much of a streak of performances. We'll talk later about the judging criteria, but I guess, I don't know, Liana, and when it comes to Monster I'd Like to Freak, are we giving more emphasis to the monster or the freak side of things? Because it really seemed like the criteria varied depending on the person.
I mean, I guess it seemed to be pretty equal in terms of you have to somehow balance being a monster and also being sexy. That was kind of what I got. Although, yeah, I don't know. The judging really seemed to be a little bit all over the place. But that was what I got. I mean, just from Rue going around the workroom and essentially saying like, okay, but how are you going to make it a monster? Maybe I would say more on the monster if I had to pick a side, but I would say it's seem to be about a balance of the two.
It has to be monster unless your name is Brooklyn Heights. That's the thing. It has to be monster. Everybody had to do a monster unless your name is Brooklyn Heights and you can walk on your goddamn toes and impress the guest judge who happens to be there, who just happened to be cast in the movie that you're currently portraying in the second part of the challenge. Girl, bye. I'm so through with the judging in this episode. It was bullshit. I mean, Liana, it wasn't consistent. That's the thing. Like, I'm sorry. I'll jump ahead, but really quickly, they said to Ariel, okay, well, that's not a monster. That's a mermaid. A mermaid is not a monster. What the fuck was Brooklyn? She even said herself she was a wife who had buried five husbands. She was not a freaking monster. How the hell did she win this challenge? Yeah, she looked great. It was interesting, fun, but she didn't do the challenge. At least Evie tried to do the challenge. She tried, but Brooklyn just said, to hell with it. I'm just going to do this and pray that my other two looks carry me, which unfortunately they did. Yeah, I'm a little mad.
What makes a monster? Like, now I'm confused because, like, RuPaul seemed to have a very clear definition, even though it was almost like, you know how the Supreme Court, I can't remember his name, but the Supreme Court justice, it was like, I don't know what porn is, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah, I know it when I see it. Yeah.
What's his face? Yeah, exactly. The old dead white guy. Anyway, so here, this is a similar situation where it's like, I don't know what a monster is, but I know it when I see it. And that's kind of how it felt in terms of the criteria of what a monster is.
Yeah, I feel like RuPaul would probably just slap you at this point and go, come on, bitch, you know what a monster is. Like, I mean, yeah, like I heard people on social media go, well, Ru didn't say that the monster had to be evil. Oh, come on. Come on. Like, she's got freaking Elvira there. Come on, they got spooky music on the right. It's supposed to be... yeah, it's supposed to be bad. It's a monster challenge. Come on.
That was your own monster noise there, Brent. You're like Frankenstein. Yeah.
They were trying to define obscenity at the Supreme Court, and Potter Stewart said, to something to the effect, I'm sure Zach Glossler, who is an attorney, would, or he actually is currently a law clerk, he would correct me on this, but Potter Stewart said, "I don't know what obscenity is, but I know it when I see it." That was his legal definition of obscenity, and that's where, like, the appellate court judges underneath them would have to utilize that opinion in order to define obscenity in the future. And of course, they gave other, you know, reasons about what it could be. So that's where Liana's coming from here, I think, in that she doesn't know what a monster is, but she knows it when she sees it. So, like, that's just what we're going to have to go on. Is that what you're trying to say, Liana?
Yeah. Okay. So the quote is, "I shall not today attempt to further define the kinds of material I understand to be embraced within the shorthand description of hardcore pornography. And perhaps I could never succeed in intelligibly doing so, but I know it when I see it." And the motion picture involved in that case is not that.
Yes. And I remember reading, I actually read the case and the backstory on this. I think one of the famous authors who covers the Supreme Court did something on Justice Blackmun's papers. And he said that they were given, like, as part of the supplemental evidence, they were given the movie, that, like, the smut movie, to review. And, like, the clerks had to, like, put the movie on. And, like, he's like, "I think some of the justices watched it." And they're like, "Oh my God." It's like, thinking about it was just, like, too much for me.
Wow. Today I learned Brett Wolgamott is to the Supreme Court as RuPaul is to Murder, She Wrote.
I have a thing with, I do keep up on the Supreme Court. At one time in my life, I wanted to be an attorney. I'd have been a feisty one too, I must say.
Yeah, you'd make Atticus Fitch look like a glass of milk. I did love, by the way, Rue big dogging Nina West on her Murder, She Wrote knowledge.
Oh, yes. Oh, that was great. Oh my God, I'm so glad you bring that up. Yes, because it was not sooner out of her mouth, Liana, where then Rue was immediately like, "No, bitch, no."
Oh my God, yeah, great. That was, if I was, like, I felt so bad for Nina West in that moment. I was like, oh God, and she's scrambling.
And she knew it too.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Another thing I want to talk about with this workroom stuff. So we have, like you said, Liana, we get more time in the workroom. And as a result, we're starting to see some friendships, maybe more than friendships if you're talking about Brangy, but some connections evolve. We have the Dream Girls, which are Silky, Akiria, and Vanjie. I didn't know if Silky was saying that the top three was going to, and the challenge was going to be them, or the top three in general. But Brent, I guess when it comes to longevity, what chance do you think these three stand of, you know, adhering to Silky's prediction that they are going to make the finale together?
In a word, zero. Look, I don't know what's going on here, but Akiria isn't getting no love from the judges, and I think she should have been in the top also this challenge. I thought she was amazing during this challenge. I don't know why they're not looking at her more. I'm really kind of annoyed about that. Vanjie, on the other hand, I think is too repetitive, and as much as we love her, I do feel like she is destined for a top seven, top six, top five kind of finish. I do not think she will make the finale. She could. I mean, you know, queens get brought back. Sometimes they do. Eureka did. On the other hand, Cynthia didn't. I'm trying to think anybody else that's brought back. Shangela almost made it to the end. I feel like she's going to go out in the Shangela spot, like, you know, 7, 6, 5, somewhere in that area.
Yeah, I noticed, not to get ahead to the judging, but, like, this is the week for me where I was like, all right, stop putting stuff on your head. Like, I'm over it. I'm over the big things on top of your head, Vanjie. Like, stop it.
another thing that Silky did that I actually really enjoyed was at the mirror talk. There was some talk about, like, Halloween, first time you were in drag, etc. But I love the Silky Brooke back and forth with the blank to the runway chance where, you know, Brooklyn was done up in her mummy wear and Silky comes with toiletries to the runway. Brooke comes back with Dollar Tree to the runway. And then Silky just starts screaming Charmin to the runway. It's those types of things that make me enjoy Silky, not Nicki Minaj as a character. As a person, not so much, but as a character, I think that she's, the girls are now, like, working with her in terms of this, these shenanigans. And that's what makes it really fun to me.
Attitude check.
Oh, yeah, they haven't gotten to that level yet where they're bringing that back into the vernacular, but they're doing this at least.
Angel soft. Sorry, I learned. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm being educated on all the toilet brands, like toilet paper brands.
Yeah, that's what she has her doctorate in, I'm assuming. Is that
I was thinking maybe you'd price them for the B&B or something. I wasn't sure.
God. Yeah, don't spoil next week. All right, well, let's get into the runway because we got a lot to talk through with the ball. But first, we have our two guest judges for this episode. Cara Delevingne, a supermodel and of many movies fame, including, I guess, most recently, or infamously, Suicide Squad. And making her third appearance on RuPaul's Drag Race, Miss Elvira. Liana, what did you think about this week's panel?
I mean, it was nice to see Elvira back. Obviously, this is her third time judging. So, you know, she really has such a familiarity with the show, which is nice. I thought Kara did fine. Also, one thing, though, that I did notice was that they both got to give a lot of comments for the judging. And I don't know if this is because they had a lot of comments to give, and so the editors felt like they wanted to show their comments. But I felt like in comparison to Michelle Visage and was it Ross?
Yeah.
Who, yeah. Like, I don't even remember.
Can we put Carson Kressley's picture on a milk carton or something? Because he didn't judge the last episode, did he? Have we gotten, like, four straight episodes of Ross instead of Carson?
I
think so. Yeah, I haven't missed him, though. I enjoy Ross, so it's fine.
I like them both. It's just something I noticed of, like, you would think this type of challenge particularly would be Carson's because it's design. You know, I missed him saying, you know, like the fabulously fashionable Carson Matthews instead of the hilarious
Carson Kressley.
I'm sorry, I'm shipping them together.
God.
Yes.
I've uncovered my judging fan fiction that I've written about the past couple of years. But yeah, it's just odd. I don't know if Carson's been off doing stuff, but his absence has been noticed, at least on my end.
Yeah. Well, she's got work. You know, she's got things to do. Yeah.
Brent, any thoughts about these two?
You can't go wrong with Elvira, honey. I love her. They are so right. Bitch, I can remember being a young, like, 9-year-old gay boy, 1984, scary movies on Saturday, watching freaking Elvira, like, it wasn't during the day, it was in the night. That's where it was. It was like 3 a.m. in the morning, and there's Elvira there. And oh my God, she looks exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And her boobs look great. Oh, good. And I do love the fact that they commented either in the episode and then on Untucked about how parents will see that you like Elvira or you have Elvira's picture on your wall. And they'll think, oh, like, look, isn't that cute? His first girlfriend, or he has a crush on her, when really you're just queer as hell, you know? So I agreed with that because I remember, like, enjoying Elvira when I was younger, but it's because she was so outrageous and so such a drag queen. But my parents thought that I was into the boobs. And there's a little bit of a disconnect there in terms of, oh, you like I was offended that my parents were not into me liking her because they thought I was into the boobs. But then later on, I'd be like thankful that they thought that because then I didn't have to come out as early. So it's hard to explain what I'm trying to say. Basically, I was offended that my parents thought I was so smutty that I would be attracted to the boobs. I was like, no, I have taste. Like, I actually like her makeup, but then I realized that in telling them that I like her makeup, I would be outing myself. So there you go. Yes. Okay.
Leon, sorry I interrupted you before. Did you have something to say about Kara in particular as a judge?
No, I had something to say about Carson Kressley. Okay, for some reason, I've started getting Us Weekly magazines at my house. I don't know why, but...
That sounds weird.
Now that I get... Well, I think maybe it was like one of those things where I had unused airline miles, and I was like, ugh, I should just like use them up and get magazines. You can get magazines. But I don't remember doing it, and I did it forever ago, and now I'm just getting them. Look, it's not important. The point I'm trying to make is the fact that...
The only one who can ramble.
I'm just nervous about what else you might have subscribed to without remembering.
No, so far only Us Weekly, but, you know, who knows? We'll find out. Anyway, so in the style bit at the end of the Us Weekly magazines, there's the, like, style don'ts, and Carson Kressley was in one of those for wearing a very, like, ugly geometric blazer. So he's at least out there wearing ugly sport coats somewhere.
I wonder if that's why, like, he's on Ru's shit list now of, like, if you make Us Weekly's don't list, you make the RuPaul don't list for at least a little bit. Sit in the corner.
Yes.
Don't come back to judge.
Yeah, you have many corners on your jacket, so you have to go sit in the corner now. All right, let's get into these balls, and we're going to lump them together queen by queen, just because it's probably easiest. We'll have them a little gaggle of trick-or-treaters, because there's a lot of looks to talk through, and it's probably easiest. So let's go in order here. Let's start with Akiria Chanel Davenport. Brent, I'll start with you because you felt like Akiria should have gotten more kudos this week than she received, which was none, in that she was safe and got sent back with the middle of the pack. Talk to me about your thoughts on these three looks, the Trampy Trick-or-Treater, the Witch Please, and the MILF.
Yeah, I thought she should have been in the top. I thought these were great. The only thing that I think that I wish there was a little bit more color. There's a whole lot of black here. Why I gotta be black? I don't know. But I do love the Trampy Trick-or-Treater look. But this was a really interesting take on doing Trampy Trick-or-Treater. I will also give her props for the fact that everything was glued the fuck down. Nothing moved except those cards that she had in her hand. And also, the table was like totally attached to the outfit. It also did not move. A lesser drag queen would have just done the table as something over her neck and sort of put it in front of her and just like hoped that, you know, gravity and natural suspension would hold it. But no, that thing was stuck in place. I thought this was great and a fun, interesting take. I love the fact that the bow tie is absolutely massive. The third look, the monster I'd like to freak, I thought was really genius. Again, she made this. And well, with all of those arms, it's like a spider, tarantula kind of thing with the interesting makeup. She can paint more than one mug. She has more than one hair, more than one wig. I mean, I look at people like her and I'm going, like, what does she have to do to get noticed? I also felt like the Witch Please look, while it did make her look heavy with that cape, and I know it's a little bit difficult to see in the picture that I provided for you guys. It still was one of the standouts in that part of the competition because it read witch to me, but not like campy witch that I felt like she kind of mailed in. Like, I feel like there was some thought put into this, and I'm really bummed that she didn't get any feedback.
So yeah. are you going to wear her first outfit around the casino just to look glamorous and have a table whenever you need it?
Listen, on Fridays, they let us wear T-shirts, and I put a picture on Facebook. If you don't know, go like it right now if you're a friend of me. I try to like show off as much body as I can when they let me. But something like this, I would die for, and I will try to get them to let me wear it. They have these thing called like dealer tainers, and you can audition for it. For those of you who don't know, I have been a table games dealer before, but I took 2 years off and now I am a table games dealer again at Hollywood Casino. They have these things called the dealer tainers, which is like people who get dressed up as celebrities. I could go as Kyria Chanel Davenport by going as the poker dealer and wearing like a table around my neck. I think that'd be great.
I would love to see that. I very Thank much you. Support this idea. I think for me, in terms of her looks, what I got lost, especially on the last two, was the fact, Brent, like you said, there was so much black. So it was very one-dimensional. So I couldn't see a lot of the cool things that she was doing. I probably liked her sexy trick-or-treater look the most, especially because like having that table, if you're out drinking, trick-or-treating, whatever, that's nice to have that table there, you know? Yeah. But the Maleficent look, the fact that Plastic Tiara did it later and I think did it better really made me think less of that look from Akiria. But I did enjoy the spider. Like, I thought that was a cool, sexy monster take. So I appreciated that for her MILF look.
How dare you, Liana? Akiria is not channeling Maleficent. She's channeling Charlize Theron as the queen from Snow White and the Huntsman. Don't confuse your witches.
Right. Oh, of course. Thank you for clarifying.
I was going to clock her if you didn't.
No, I do agree with you that I think, you know, the second look, it's the timing is also interesting as well in that she was the first one out. And I think she set the pace well in terms of like what a pretty good witch outfit is. I think there were ones that were better than hers and worse than hers. So I think that one lands her squarely in the middle. Her spider look, I totally agree. I looked at it and I said, Black Widow, that looks great. I just the effect of like the plump booty as well, which would another part of her would probably be producing some web like fluid. Hopefully not that part, but I think it was a really fun take on a, you know, again, we don't know exactly what a monster is, but this is something monstrous and she still kept the beauty in it. But yeah, I think my favorite was her Trampy Trick-or-Treater. You know, it's her wheelhouse with the glamour and the headpiece, but it had, like you said, Brent, I give her props for the literal props that she had.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is that her makeup, although you can't see it as well in this picture, her makeup for the Monster I'd Like to Freak was really, really well done. A little quite harsher than what's being seen here. I really felt like, what must she do to get praise? Because I feel like she's great in the performative challenges. Not amazing, but great. And I feel like she's pretty freaking great in the design challenges. This might be an instance of you know, you're not really amazing at everything, and thus RuPaul gets a little bored by you. I know there are other queens on RuPaul's Drag Race who have gotten tripped up by that in the past, where they're pretty good at everything, but they're not a standout. And because of that, like, they're a jack of all trades. They're a fantastic drag queen, can get tons of work, but it's not gonna win you a crown, and that may be a problem.
It's very much like a mile wide and an inch deep. And we all know that RuPaul does not like things that are an inch deep.
Yeah, I don't think Akira is an inch deep, but I take your point that it is a mile wide.
All right, well, let's get into Miss Vanjie. Liana, what did you make of the one half of Brangie, how she did this week with her first ball ever?
Okay, so first I'll talk about her trick-or-treater look, because when she walked out with those wings, I was like, they look like Dumbo ears. Like, that was the first thing that popped in my head, which is terrible. Yeah. And then that's all I could think the whole time. So then I was like, oh, I know that she's sexy. Like, she looks really good with the corset and everything, but she's got Dumbo ears as wings, and it was really bothersome. But I mean, I think overall, like, between the three looks that she put together, I think it was safe. I think her last look with the tombstone on her head, that was the point where I was like, all right, I'm over the putting things on your head. The props to her, though, for none of them being red. So good on that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, there was nothing in particular that really stood out. I feel like she has a very same silhouette every single time.
Yes.
So I think that's going to get pretty boring. So
yes.
We'll see.
Oh, Jesus. I'm waiting for them to call her out about that. Like, I mean, I know they sort of did before, but Mike, I really, really hate the fact that her silhouettes just are so repetitive. It's the same cut. Around the crotch area, it's the same, like, cinchness to it. Like, it's not all the same, but it does feel very samey to me. I'm with Liana as well. The head props, like, she's not even good at the head props. Usually they're, like, tilted or, like, heavy or something. And the wings also, the reason they look like Dumbo ears is because they're a little droopy. And maybe that's a fault of the maker, who I don't know. Maybe that was her. Maybe it was somebody else. I know she probably paid somebody to do it. But they don't look great. I thought this was the epitome of safe. She looks good. I thought the witch was the weakest. To me, she could have worn that at the club. Like, I didn't get witch from that at all. The only thing that I got witch from was the sort of, like, black leaf-like dress that she could, like, take up and down. That was very, you know, very grand and very regal and very, you know, I guess you could say witchy, but it was a stretch.
I mean, I think my favorite part of all three of her outfits was the reveal of the witch outfit, where it, like, came down from a cowl into a dress. And we're not talking like Alyssa Edwards' two-in-one look. Is one look is I hold up part of the dress, and the other one is that I let the dress down. It was a good reveal. And it was, I think it was maybe trying to go for what Ariel tried to go for and ultimately failed with like, not your conventional witch, going for a more fashionable look. I wonder if maybe the reason why we're seeing the same silhouette is because maybe there's a bit of overcompensation of, you know, last time I got eliminated because I had no waist. Now I'm going to make sure they see my waist every single time.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, she got rid of the body glitter this episode. So I feel like it's one piece of feedback at a time for Miss Vanjie. But I was not a huge fan of the angel look, but I did love the fact that, you know, you have this person walk out as an angel, then you hear like, I chose to be an angel. Just the voice coming out of her is so disparate. It's great.
So true.
I did notice that as well. Yes, like my look today.
Oh boy. So let's talk about Plastique Tierra, because to your point, Brent, about the judging, this might be a hot take. I personally would put in a bid for Plastique to win this challenge, because I am a little miffed with the judges about this. Like, she's not showing personality. I'm a little confused, because if you rewind back to episodes 2 and 3, when she was showing personality in those acting challenges, they were telling a different story. I guess my concern is that I didn't realize that maybe these design challenges also embody selling the garment on the runway. Because I would argue, if you had Plastique's looks with Brooklyn's just walk/dance that she did with her outfits, you have a winning combination there. But I think it's just because Plastique sort of went out there and stood on the runway, the judges were looking for a bit more. But I was sufficiently impressed by all three of these. Liana, what did you feel?
Yeah, I really liked these looks too. And I know that there was a read earlier about, oh, she's just going to wear a bunch of corsets. Like, okay, sure. Two of her looks were corsets. And I mean, I couldn't tell from the last one. I mean, she was definitely cinched in the last one. But I kind of didn't care because she looked so gorgeous. And I thought that, okay, yeah, Playboy Bunny is pretty like stereotypical. It felt really different. From some of the other looks, like maybe it was because Akira, all of them were black and this was like, oh, we're going to do pink, black and I guess more black. But anyway, I don't know. There was something about the details that really stood out to me that made it feel so polished and so put together, especially with the differences in the makeup for all of the looks that made it feel like really three clearly different looks. And so, yeah, I don't know. I thought she should have won this challenge, too.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely being outvoted by the two of you because I didn't even think she deserved to be in the top. I thought she was safe. I wasn't impressed by her, and I'm with Elvira on this one. It takes more than a pretty look to get my attention on RuPaul's Drag Race. I mean, Mike, this is not Fashion Week. This is not, you know, America's Next Top Model. This is RuPaul's Drag Race. And in order to win or to be a contender, you have to have some sort of personality. I think you were right in that there's a little bit of an inconsistency from episodes 2 and 3. But I think what you're missing is they want her to have a different personality, not the one she currently has. The one she has is boring. They want her to be somebody else. And the way she presents her looks on the runway really rubbed me the wrong way. It's like the least amount of effort possible. And when you're there judging 33 freaking looks, I have to believe that that's going to impact you. The Playboy Bunny, boring, so predictable. Yeah, it was well done, but still boring. You know, again, she's, I don't even know how old she is. Like, what is she, like 24?
No, she just turned 21 before filming.
Oh, whatever. So she's even younger than I thought. Yeah, she weighs like 120 soaking wet. So, of course, anything she does is going to look pretty. And I did not appreciate the fact that she never, ever looked really not pretty to me. Everything was, oh, I look pretty. Like the Playboy Bunny, pretty. Maleficent, looks gorgeous. Beat for the gods. But still, just pretty. And the last look, the Monster I'd Like to Freak, was the closest she ever got to stepping outside of her comfort zone. And still, she's wearing a cinched dress with, you know, heels, big hair, and a little bit of makeup around the mouth area, but the eyes are still beat for the gods. Like, tell me where she's stepping outside of her box here. I just thought this was so safe to me. And I guess the fact that her personality is wanting leaves me wanting.
But you're supposed to want to freak them. She's supposed to look freakable as the monster.
It didn't look monsterish to me. It looked like a fashion model who put some Halloween makeup on. That's mm-hmm. what it looked like.
What would you say is the difference between this and something Violet Chachki would do?
I think Violet Chachki has more personality with her walk. Look, it's Mike. It's about the performance to me. I think Evie Oddly is out there because of her performance in that. I think that the way she walks, I think Brooklyn's out there and winning in part by how she presents her outfits. I do think that that is a part of the challenges that maybe we missed in the past or that we, you know, sort of like subconsciously thought about but never really thought about. Like if you can just stomp out there and just own your shit, I do feel like the judges are going to be more responsive or at least take more notice of you. The fact that she was able to make it into the top by virtue of the fact that she had no personality whatsoever was to me an indictment of the other queens and that everyone else did okay. Although, like I said, there's two people who, one we have talked about, one who we'll get to, who I feel like do deserve to be in the top. The judging was whack this episode. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah.
Because you all think that she should have won. I don't even think she should have been in the top. Two people are missing from the top that I think should be there. It's a mess.
For what it's worth, I think that even if you might not be catching, I mean, she's been in the top 3 out of the past 5 episodes. And I do think that maybe this might be a moment. Hopefully she does listen to the judges, because I do see your point that I think maybe something that we have discounted is when it comes to the runway, it's not just looks. There's also this idea of presentation that I guess does not really get talked about until maybe this episode about how, like, yeah, you can come out and put out a good look, but you need to almost sort of act the part and tell a story. And I do say that while I really enjoyed all these looks personally, and I love Plastique, and I feel like she was stepping out a bit of her box, especially with that last look, she didn't really tell a story, as opposed to some of these other queens. Even people like Suga, who tried to tell a story and failed, are going for something a bit more audacious. So hopefully she learned that lesson and is able to combine that with her already killer aesthetic to produce a winning combination.
I mean, I doubt it. Like, I don't think she's going to win, but I think she's gorgeous and I love her looks. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's like Brent said, it's not that she doesn't have a personality. It's that they want a different personality. And so that's not going to happen. So I think she can turn as many gorgeous looks as she wants on the runway, but I just don't see her as a contender to win, like in the end.
Well, let's move over to Brent's de facto winner for this episode. Give me all your thoughts, Brent, on Scarlett.
I don't know how they didn't notice Scarlett Envy. And let me just say, if you've been listening to RuPaul's Drag Race the past few weeks, I am not a Scarlett Envy fan. I am not impressed by Scarlett Envy. Even as a boy, I don't really care for Scarlett Envy because I'm not really into the long hair of it all. But my God, were these three amazing looks. She was so robbed here. The first one, the Trampy Trick-or-Treater as a pirate, I thought was really, really great. The boots are to die for with those like glitter boots that are really up to her thighs. You might want to take note, Raja O'Hara saying you got thigh-high boots on when they come up to your goddamn knees. Anyway, so this is fun. This is trampy to me. It reads as trampy, and it also reads as trick-or-treater. I'm living for it. I can see some bitch going to a Halloween party wearing this exact same outfit. The witch was such an interesting take on it. Everyone else went for, you know, the black of it all. This was not black. It had more depth to it. It was like a Fire Island witch, but it also like had emanations of like swamp witch to me or voodoo witch. Like I felt like this is more voodoo witch than what anything Evie did. You can't see it real well in this picture, but she also had this like prosthetic nose, which I don't even think she totally needed, but she went the extra mile for it. I just thought, and pants on the runway for a witch look, and she pulled it off. And I love the witch hat. I think it's great. But let me say that the monster I'd like to freak was far and away the best that was on the runway all episode long. And I know that they tried to shade us and trick us earlier by showing her in the workroom walking around thinking she's going to be in the bottom there, that, you know, that she doesn't know what she's talking about. She did know what she was talking about. This looked great. This was everything you'd want. Like, it has pieces of both monster, it does look like a monster, and it looks fuckable. It looks like somebody out of the Shape of Water, but it also looks like Creature from the Black Lagoon. And the way she, like, I specifically did a close-up. I took a few pictures for our group chat, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, because the site hasn't been updated, and I wanted to show her makeup specifically. The fact that this is done as well as it is, you know, with the latex over the whole face and the eye makeup where you can't see an inch of skin anywhere in the front. I think there was a little bit of skin in the back when she turns around. But overall, this was just wonderful. Fulfilled every aspect of the challenge. I wasn't bored by anything. And I was like sort of stunned by it because I was thinking that like the way they were telling the story, she was probably going to be in the bottom. And I didn't get any resolution to the story whatsoever. In fact, I was kind of mad in Untucked that I didn't get to hear her bitching about the fact that she should have been in the top because she should have been in the top. I'm hoping you guys can at least appreciate the fact. Oh, I know, Mike, you said top four or five. Liana, what did you feel about Scarlett in here? And was she robbed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think she did really well. I think the monster from the Black Lagoon that she did, like, why? What? I have to imagine that there was something about it that the judges just didn't click with. Like, I don't know if there was something about it that didn't look finished or it looked cheap or something, because I think as a concept, it was really cool. And she was able to merge those two ideas of being a monster, but also being fuckable. But at the same time, you know, I guess Plastique did that. And I would say that these two looks are very, very different. But I thought actually my favorite look was the witch, because yeah, it was so different from everybody else's. And it was something unique. And it was something that, you know, who would have thought of this? And I agree with you. I don't know if she necessarily needed the prosthetic, but the way that she performed this, if we're talking about performance of looks, was so good. With the witch, like even the lick of her like crucifix thing or the rosary. Yeah, like that was so cool. She was kind of terrifying. So yeah, I absolutely could have seen her in the top three, but if not, I mean, definitely like this was top four, top five for sure.
Mike, the thing I wanted to say really quickly too about her is that she did things that nobody else did, both for the witch and for the monster look. Again, the monster look wasn't close to anything else that we saw on the runway. And there were people who were just mailing it in to me who did make it into the top, like Plastic. I felt like, I'm sorry, Plastic, to me, she mailed it in. She did. This was interesting and terrifying for her to do, and she was not sure about herself, and she like looked at it and was like, okay, I think this is working. And the costume moved the way that she wanted it to move, and I just was in love with it. I really liked it.
Plus, it has a booty hole for easy access. I think it's
the outfit.
Yeah, I agree with you that I think the MILF outfit is one of my favorite outfits of this runway, because if we're talking about filling that Venn diagram between monstrous yet somehow sexy, you know, she is embodying this creature from the Black Lagoon, albeit I think it ends up being more of like the poop-colored lagoon, considering the fabric that she chose, but it also sort of fills this weird... I mean, she looked like the Gimp from Pulp Fiction. She had, like, the S&M mask on, mm-hmm, which I thought was a really fun take on it, and it was super creative. The first outfit is sort of what brings her down for me from some of the other queens, because I think that there was some fun stuff going on, but I think Jiggly Caliente or Manila talked about this in the pit stop. It reminded me just a bit of, like, a Halloween store thing, which, granted, is what they're going for, but it didn't seem that elevated to me, in my opinion, at least compared to, it's interesting to see how the queens weighted their looks. You know, if you look at someone like Akiria, who really emphasized the first look, and you look at someone like Scarlet, who really emphasized the latter too, it's interesting to compare them. I like the Sea Witch. It really was. I know, Ariel was channeling Meryl Streep in Into the Woods. This feels like the true channeling of the witch in Into the Woods, with really uglifying herself. And I loved, she completely outdid Vanjie in one challenge on the headpiece of it all by wearing a big old buoy on her head. So this is, again, it just confuses me even more how they're showing Scarlet, because she, in my opinion, she's been doing really well. Basically, since the second episode, she's either been safe or arguably should have been in the top. So I think she's got a good streak going on so far.
She's going to have a downfall. That's what I'm saying. Like, this editing is setting us up for something. Or maybe it's to explain why she hasn't been in the top as much. I don't know. But yeah, I actually want to go back, Mike, to your comment just real quick about the fact that the last look, if it looked like something from the Halloween store, I think that's probably what it was. Like, if it looked cheap or it looked like it was something you could buy for $20, like, it was a cool idea, but it needed to be elevated. And maybe that's why she wasn't in the top.
Maybe I'm easy, but I'm sorry. But I also
respond
to that. I'm easy, but to me, like, this looked expensive to me. I'm sorry, the Trampy Trick or Treater, the pirate outfit, it did look expensive to me. I feel like there are some shades of gold that are cheap, and there are other shades of gold that come off looking really tasteful and fun and expensive. And I felt like that she had the right shade here with the neck piece and the gold that was bedazzled on the bodice and the boots and then the chain that she was wearing and the eye patch. Maybe the eye patch looks a little corny, but nevertheless, it felt really hot to me, and I like the boots. Oh, I'm living for the boots.
Okay. Well, let's move on. Let's sail this ship away and talk about someone who I also thought did, especially compared to her first design challenge, a remarkably better job by comparison. Liana, give me your thoughts on Nina West this week.
Yeah, I think because I was so nervous, like, I'm happy that they showed the nipple dress again that she made for the first challenge, because I was like, oh God, that was so abominable. This was so much better. The Venus flytrap, though, did she have that look before?
Oh, yeah. Well, my assumption is that they brought the first two looks and had to craft the third one. Because I think looking at those first two, there's no way Nina made those first two looks.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
That's kind of what I thought. Okay, so, yes, I actually really liked both of her first two looks. I'll talk about those first. The Venus flytrap I thought was so creative and so cool. I loved the boob like mouths. And then for the witch doing the, you know, like the pilgrim at the stake, such a cool concept. I thought it was really funny. What I did not like was the execution of it. Like, I felt that the flames looked so cheap, and I guess that's her
cheap
drag. It's this campy, you know, funny campy drag. It'd be so cool if she could merge the two a little bit more with the high fashion with the camp and be able to do this concept but in a high fashion way. But, you know, I mean, that's not who she is as a drag queen, but it would have been cool to see. And then just, I'll talk about her last look briefly, because good on her. No stray nipples all over her body. So props to that. I liked the incorporation of the mask. Again, I thought that it was her face when she walked out. I was like, wait, is this her normal mug? Oh, good.
Yeah.
Thank God. No, it's not. I thought she deserved to be safe, and I'm sure she was happy to be.
Yeah, if there were any problems, I feel like the last look saved her, because I also, on the first watch, did not notice that that wasn't her real face. I thought that was her real face, and then when she took it off, I was like, ah! Yeah.
Which is great. I think that's, like, she produced probably the most gruesome effect. Like, she legitimately produced a freaky look for the last one, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't see it coming. That was the great part. Whereas, like, with Evie's, like, spinning up diamonds thing, I was like, okay, girl, get it over with. Like, let's go. Yeah, I'm with Liana. Boy, these look cheap. Boy, these look cheap. These look like, I mean, talk about something that's crafty and homemade. The witch outfit was so tired. It looked so dated. I'm sorry it did. I love Nina as a person, but this looked like, okay, when I was on The Price is Right, my ex made t-shirts for me, and he used, like, you had to press it on with the iron, and then once you press it on, it would, like, stick to the t-shirt. That's what this looks like. This looks like this looks like school play cutouts that you put on a dress. I'm totally with Leon here. The execution is wrong. I love the idea of it. I'm glad she had a different take. By the way, I don't know what's at all trampy about the first look. I guess that she's in a pencil skirt, I guess, but I felt like, to me, what this felt like was she previously had worn this look before. I think she even said something to that effect, and she sort of tried to shoehorn it into this challenge, but it did not work for me. I would have had her safe, but barely.
Brent, how dare you? Little Slut of Horrors is going to be the newest Halloween costume. Just you wait. Sexy Audrey 2 is around the corner come October. Mm. The first two, at least. I mean, I was legitimately freaked by the last one, and I give her major kudos there. Because that's freaking awesome. I know this is not Face Off, and we're not specifically dealing with, you know, realistic makeup, but God, I was telling her, like, the opposite of Valentina, like, keep it on, please. Please keep the mask on. I don't want to see that freaky lack of bottom half. It was also super weird during Untucked seeing her talk, too, out of, like, this flesh gap. But
yeah,
the first two were fun ideas. I agree with you, Brent. I have no idea why this is considered trampy trick-or-treater. I know that Angela and I were watching this, and we're like, wouldn't this be more of a third option? Granted, she killed it with the third option, but, like, you could say that a Venus flytrap Audrey 2 is a monster in some sort of fashion. Mm. I really loved the idea of the second one. I loved her taking it back old school to a witch hunt, but yeah, we saw this with the Leo dynamic as well. Her aesthetic is a little color forms. You guys remember the color forms, the, like, velvet shapes that you would throw onto things, they would cling to them? That sort of is what she did here. It's very iron on flames, and I love this idea, and I love the way she sold it. Again, like the first challenge, she acts the shit out of it, and I love it. And I agree that I think, you know, she needed something there. It couldn't have just been her in a pilgrim outfit, because I feel like that's not telling enough of a story, but I feel like there could have been something better with the flames. Even if you walk out Kennedy Davenport style with a fire mohawk, maybe that would be a little better, but the bottom half just reads a little cheap. And so it seems like for what it's worth, though, the judges enjoy what she's putting out there and don't mind it, so I can't knock her too bad for it, especially with that third look, which, again, I was gagged by, much like she was by all the flesh in her mouth.
It's the same thing that's happening with Silky and with Evie, Liana, in that Nina is such a great person and such a cool human being that RuPaul is not bored by her, and even though some of these are landing a little flat, she still likes her and enjoys her enough to keep her in the competition. Again, this is RuPaul's show. She can do what the hell she wants to do, and as Allie told us last week, Ru is going to do what Ru's going to do. So I think Nina is in it for the long term. I think that Nina, if she doesn't go to the end, is going to be very much like Banji. She's going to make, like, top 5, 6. And if she doesn't, it's probably going to be something like this that trips her up. But she's got personality for days. The show obviously loves her. They use her in confessionals almost as much as they use Silky. And I was just a little bummed that this felt like it was like, I felt like this was like Halloween costume out of the box. Mm-hmm. with the second look. I really did not like it. And again, I didn't like, it wasn't Trampy Trick or Treater. It was not. Sorry. All right.
Well, let's move on here to Raja O'Hara, who with her kitty cat costume in addition to her other two was able to claw her way out of the bottom for a third week in a row. Liana, give me your thoughts on all things Raja.
Yeah, okay, so I just want to clock what Brent said earlier about that. I'm wearing thigh-high boots. No, they were knee-high boots. Like, I took anatomy. I know where your knees start and stop, and those went to your knees. But anyway, I thought that the kitty cat look was, it was obviously very sexy. I feel like, though, for trick-or-treating, you need more skin. So I was like, more naked, please. But I thought that she did really well with the, well, no, I take that back. She did not do really well with the other two looks. I actually wasn't crazy about these. I thought that going for, you know, the Wizard of Oz type thing, I thought was cool. It was definitely a unique take, but I don't know. I just wasn't super crazy about the outfits. And maybe it's because I'm not super crazy about Raja as a queen, that, you know, don't make me like super excited to see her looks, because the last one I got shades of her Capricorn look. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was because of the horns or whatever. And what was she trying to be? Didn't she have a name?
The Bone Collector.
The Bone Collector, yes. And she had the snake with the snake skeleton thing. I don't know. I guess I just didn't, I wasn't particularly gagging over these. And to be honest, I don't really remember much about them.
Yeah. It was a boot for me for the first one. I didn't know what the hell that was. That looked cheap to me. It looked like something she'd wear at the club. And I think she'd wear this at the club. And then she put the mask over it to make it look like Trampy Trick or Treater. That's what I think. I don't understand the second look. I mean, I know Rue didn't say you have to be a good witch or a bad witch. Still, to me, it didn't read as any kind of witch necessarily. I wasn't sure like what she was supposed to be. Like, yeah, she's from Oz, but the witch in Oz never dressed like that. Not even in the new Wizard of Oz, like the Wonderful Wizard of Oz. So I didn't like that. And the last one, again, where's the monster? There's no monster to me. I know she's got horns on her head, but as they told Silky, horns on her head does not a monster make. I did enjoy the pants, but I also felt like the pants were something that she either had from home that she used in the costume. I don't know what the rules were in that, what they had to use, but I don't think she made those pants. I felt like she should have been in. Okay, let me think. Who was in the bottom? So yeah, well, okay, maybe she's barely safe. She's with Nina. She's barely safe, because there were, fortunately for her, there are three other people who are really, really terrible.
Yeah, there were aspects of these that I enjoyed. For some reason, I really liked the mask in the first one.
Oh, I see. I hate it. I feel like it's lazy. Yeah.
I like the at least the bottom half of the goat look, or the Bone Collector look. I guess we're calling this like waist high fur.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The goat look.
Yeah, and I'll give her kudos for at least going with three distinct different looks, even if they span different parts of the animal kingdom. I'm confused about the second one as well. I agree with Brent that, you know, she's going more so for ensemble member and Wicked rather than actual witch.
Yes,
but you know what? I think she was trying to appeal to it, and there were no sticklers on the judging panel to really slam her on it. So I think she did a serviceable enough job, and like you said, Brad, I think there were three people that were definitely worse than her this week, so it makes sense why she was safe, but I still think, given her past couple weeks, she's on a bit of thin ice, so hopefully we can get in as many great confessionals as possible.
Thin ice, Mike. Thin, I tell you. Speaking of people who didn't do so good, let's talk about Sugarcane.
Oh boy, poor Miss Sugarcane. I really like her, and I was intrigued by, you know, us finding out about her job history, her corporate history that she's talked about before the show. There's a reason why, because we're going to see a lot of her this episode, and not in a good way. Liana, give me all your thoughts on this not-so-sweet performance from Suga.
Okay, so when she walked out in what was apparently the troll costume, I still do not believe that this is a troll costume. She looks like a genie. Is she not a genie?
She looks like a genie, or she looks like she submerged her body in a frozen lake shortly before coming onto the runway. Because my problem is the face. The face, you know, I know Elvira says the carpet doesn't match the drapes when it comes to her Merkin look, but my issue is that, like, she was purple, I thought, when Silky was calling Ursula down to the runway. What happened here?
It's the lighting. I don't mean to interrupt you, but like you can't see it in this picture. Like and I agree with you that my problem was the face, and I'm sure that was the judge's problem as well. When you saw this under natural light in the workroom, because I think there's a picture somewhere I've seen, I can't remember where I saw it. I think I saw it on Twitter, of her just looking at the camera with natural light, like a full flash and everything. Her face pretty much matches the bodysuit, but it's a little lighter. And then when you go out on those harsh lights on the runway, it really washed her out. So it looks like she's not wearing any makeup whatsoever. And the bodysuit. By the way, Liana, I do buy that this is a troll, if only for the fact that there's a gem in the middle of her belly button. That's what the trolls have. On the other hand, to be totally critical about it, the gem should have been like five times as big because the judges didn't even notice it. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, is the hair even troll?
What the hell? Even like six-year-old kids who have been watching the Trolls movies know that troll hair does not look like that. It's got to be standing straight up.
Yeah.
She needed to have it straight up.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even get the little curl on top. Like, I just... anyway, whatever. It's still a genie. Yeah. It's a genie.
Okay.
Her third look, also not crazy about. It was just very all over the place. Like, I had no idea what was happening. I don't know.
No idea.
She was supposed to be Satan's wife, I believe. But yeah, there was, as the judges said, there were so many different components going on at once that it really muddied the waters. Unfortunately, because I think there were, so like, I really liked the bone in the nose. Like, I really liked actually her face, what she was doing with her face, but it did not match whatsoever what she was doing with the rest of her body, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we can all agree that the second look was the most successful. Yeah. And I think
it really worked. That was gruesome. Yeah,
that was great. If she could have had one more look, Liana, I think she would have been okay. Like this.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, because even like you see Evie have one really bad, according to the judges, one really bad look, two okay, like good looks. So if she had had two okay looks, because I think her middle look was really good, especially with the window that she did and the prop of like tearing out, or the mirror, I guess, of tearing out the, you know, the middle bit, then coming down the runway. And the way she sold it was just so cool. It's just the fact that the other two were horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah,
I thought for a second, like, I thought there maybe could have been a universe where Silky would have been in the bottom instead of her, but A, Silky's too much of a star that they don't want to risk getting rid of her, and B, if you look back on this, I mean, even all the girls in Untucked were like, oh yeah, we definitely know who the bottom two are, so it seems pretty clear this was not Sugarcane's week. Hopefully this, I don't know, Brent, what do you think about Sugarcane moving forward? Do you think now that she's had to lip sync twice, albeit the first one was under unusual circumstances, but do you think she can step her pussy up and move on from this?
Yes, I do. I think the show enjoys her. I think she's an interesting presence on the show. I think it's impossible not to like Sugarcane. I don't know anybody that dislikes Sugarcane. I thought it was really, really sweet seeing her boyfriend, or fiance, sorry.
That was so sweet. And he was so God. I mean, I teared up when he was talking about, like, I realized the reason why I fell in love with you. God, it was beautiful.
It really was, and I was so jealous, because, see, I served in the military under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, so I could never go. I was always, seriously, I'm not kidding about this, you guys. The one, like, the best part of it, but being in the military, besides the hot guys, is the fact that I got to go to the military ball, and so I got to, like, get up and dressed up in my dress greens, which you only get to wear for, like, special occasions. And I so wanted to go with a guy that I loved. And I couldn't do that because it was Don't Ask, Don't Tell, even though basically everybody in my unit knew I was gay, but I couldn't, like, go to the big function and, like, be gay. Like, I had to play along, basically, is what Don't Ask, Don't Tell was. So I was so jealous of this in Untucked. And I do feel like that Rue likes Suga. Because it's impossible not to like Suga. As I said, everything about her is so warm and so inviting. And you think about, oh my God, you were in a, you know, whatever, 5-6 digit paying job, and you quit it all to do drag, and your fiance supports you, and he's so cute, and you guys look great. And like, I think that Suga embodies everything that you want in a contestant on RuPaul's Drag Race. Somebody who loves to be there, who's willing to fight for it, who makes mistakes and owns her shit. Like, is she going to win? No. But I enjoy her on the show, and I feel like she's making a lot of fans.
All right, well, let's move on here to our eventual winner for this challenge, Brooklyn Heights, the first queen to win two elimination challenges this season. Liana, was it warranted, in your opinion?
Rigor mortis on the witch look. How did they know? How did she know? It's all scripted. It's reality TV. It's scripted. Okay, I will say, like, I did like all three of her looks. Now, whether or not the last one constituted a monster, like...
It doesn't. I'll help you.
Well, okay, but also you could say, like, oh, she's a monster because she buried 7 or whatever of her husbands.
That's where Rue would slap you and go, come on.
But then Rue should slap herself, because then this is not...
I know.
Burying dead husbands does not a monster make.
Correct.
The snake around her face on that last look, though, I couldn't even see it. And then I was like, oh, right. That's like where she got the snake in. I didn't really get that. But the other two looks, I mean, are really gorgeous. But this is what I want to say about Brooklyn Heights. And I don't mean to take away from the looks that she's serving on the runway or the way that she is able to do it. This is like, I feel like she has money. And I feel like she is able to commission awesome looks on the runway. But I think that at times it really highlights this discrepancy between girls that have money and girls that don't. And I know Michelle Massage would go out there and say, girl, you don't need money. You don't need money. But sometimes money helps. And I think that she, for me, just right now is kind of representing this wealth discrepancy that is kind of bothering me, especially so I'm like rewatching episodes of season 3 and just, I don't know, like this feeling of having these really well-polished looks that cost money that you get from designers, they make you stand out as a queen on the show. But at the same time, if you don't have those resources, how on earth are you able to compete? I think it was Honey Davenport who talked about, oh, I had to borrow money. I had to take out loans. Like Pheromone even talked about this on All Stars. You have to put every single dollar that you have into this. And like, it's kind of frustrating. Even in, like, this is a ball challenge. This is supposed to be a design challenge. And yet, two of the looks you can bring from home and you can bring from designers. So, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't mean to, like, ramble about this, but it's just these feelings I've been having for a little while now, and they all just came out. So, anyway.
Okay. So, I will agree with you on one of them. The witch look, which was far and away my favorite witch look. I thought it was amazing. And not only that, the way she moved on the runway, it wasn't a gimmick like the toe pointing thing. It was an actual way she presented the costume, and she made a choice about how she was going to present that costume. Again, you can hear Cara Delevingne saying, well, you know, I should have taken dance lessons, or, you know, when I did it for DC.
Would not have saved the movie, but might have helped.
That's fair. That's fair. Who thinks of that? Who thinks to say, I'm going to move like this on the runway? Again, the judges are judging 33 looks. They're freaking bored. They were perked up when they saw her on the runway for this enchantress look, which was amazing. I do take your point about the money, but on the other hand, I don't feel like the other two looks have money. Like, the mummy look, anybody could do. I think, like, it's highlighted by the fact that she's walking on her toes. I do not like the first look, by the way. I feel like any other queen who did this would have been read by the judges for mailing it in. I don't think there's anything special at all about this, except for the fact that she's walking on her toes. I would have liked more bandages. I would have liked it to be a little bit more trick-or-treatery. I felt like she was trying to be a little too cute by half on this one. And I've already screamed about the last one not being a monster. And I don't give a care that it's not monster. Michelle Visage is the one who says that it's got to be a monster, because that's what she called that Ariel for. So, bitch, you got to own your shit. And she's not owning her shit. So I don't think she deserved to win. I think she deserved to be in the top, but I would have had her top three.
Yeah, I agree that I do not think, much as I love Brooklyn Heights, I do not think this was another challenge of hers to win. And maybe they're sort of building this narrative now that, like, she's the look queen of the season because she won both design challenges. But I don't feel like it was warranted. I will give her kudos for pivoting, because we have seen 1,000 times now when you suggest something to, when you pitch something to RuPaul and RuPaul gives you crickets, and as Brooke says, those glassy eyes. I feel like there's certain times people will be like, well, I might as well keep going with it. Even if RuPaul doesn't like it, I'm sure she will out on the runway, and they don't. I'll give Brooklyn credit for saying, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing, but I'm going to pivot based on that. And I wonder if that helped bolster her in the judge's eyes a bit, that sort of elevated this pretty basic look overall, this idea that, oh, well, at least you weren't the murderous pageant runner-up who slain everyone around her and put heads on her head. I agree with you, Brent, that while this might not be an indicator of it, I think, Leona, you tap into something that is super interesting and has been very visual in the past couple of seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race. I feel like there's a reason why the All-Stars looks overall look more polished and composed and wowy than from what a lot of what we see in the regular seasons, because when you get your name out there, you get more notoriety, you get more gigs, you get more money. You can invest that money back in yourself. Look at someone like Monique Hart. Compare what she was able to do in season 10 to All Stars 4, and it's like night and day. So I feel like while maybe this particularly might not be an example of it, I think you touched upon a really interesting issue that has really come to the forefront when it comes to creating all these looks and trying to bring in things from home to impress the judges week after week.
I mean, my point on it, and, you know, I tend to veer a little bit more moderate than, you know, you're probably your average Drag Race fan, would be that I think it's probably an issue. But on the other hand, I don't know what you can really do about it. I mean, like, it's, after all, a free society, and she can spend however much money she wants. And I don't know that the way to go would be to even the playing field. I think, I mean, there's one way that they could even the playing field, if they actually cared to, would be like to give each queen a set amount of money to spend on stuff, and you'd bring your stuff and everything would have to have a receipt with it. I mean, like, again, that sounds crazy. That's the only way you could do something like that. Otherwise, this is what we're stuck with. And to me, it is an investment going on RuPaul's Drag Race. You have to have a couple of looks that are just absolute stunners. But the kicker is that you have to be around when those challenges come up. Again, you get the challenges, you don't know what order they're going to come in. You know, Ariel Versace could have a stunner look, not likely, coming up in episode 8 for whatever challenge that's going to be, but she didn't make it there, so she's going to get no return on her investment. You know, going on RuPaul's Drag Race, you get, you know, booking fees and appearance fees and your drag con and sell all your merch and all of that for whatever you do on the show. And you better make your time on the show memorable. So I give Brooklyn props in that I remember her. In fact, I do at this point consider her to be top 2A. Like I said, it was Silky and Evie. I do think that Brooklyn is now moved into a tie with Silky in terms of, you know, potentially winning RuPaul's Drag Race. But overall, like, I think that it's just something that we're going to have to deal with because there's no way to really combat the inequity when it comes to the resources that these queens have. On the other hand, you have somebody like Evie, who obviously doesn't have a lot of money, who's up there, who's killing it because of who she is. So, I feel like there's a lot of contradictory evidence.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, I don't mean to rail on Brooklyn. Like, it's not.
No, it's okay. Go ahead, rail on Brooklyn. I'd love to.
Yeah. Well, because, yeah, I mean, obviously, like, her first look, probably not the best example. It really just sort of came to me, and then it all started pouring out about the second look.
Yeah, sure.
I don't have a solution either. You know, like, it's not like I know exactly how to fix it. I think it's just, it's something that is really frustrating, especially now. Like, I have been exposed. Okay. Here's a little personal story.
No, go up. I do it sometimes. Go ahead.
My turn. Okay. Yes. So I currently work at Yale University now, and there is so much privilege here. So much freaking privilege in a way that I've never experienced in my entire life in so many different aspects, even within the science world. Like, I work as a scientist and there's so much money here and so many resources here that it's just like, oh yeah, just do that experiment. In where I was before in my previous research experiences, it was like, we had to save our money. We couldn't just go do all these experiments because it was, you know, like we just didn't have the resources. And so it's something that is like now, and I know this sounds so fucking like white privilege bullshit, but like, it's just something been like really bothering me, and now it's like noticing it in all of these different areas, and it just is leeching over into Drag Race now. And so it's just like, I don't know, I just feel bad, and I don't know how to fix it, and I don't know, I have lots of feelings. Thank you for like Drag Race therapy hour.
I mean, I don't know, and we'll talk about Evie later on, but I think, Brent, you stumbled upon a few really good points that there is really no easy way to fix this. You know, it is a matter of sort of you come in with whatever you invest in it, but I think you have people like Evie, people like Sharon Needles, who have been able to overcome those hurdles with their creativity. Even someone like Chi Chi Devane was able to really do well and win over the hearts of, you know, so many people with her ability to inspire with very little money in her pocket. So
if you're a star,
Yeah, exactly. I think that your personality doesn't have a net worth attached to it. You know, your looks may, but your stardom or star potential does not. So for what it's worth, I think that while you're looking at Brooklyn and Evie as like maybe opposite sides of the wealth gap, I think they both have the personality. Just to finish off Brooklyn really quickly, as we were talking about with Plastique, I think that this is, again, part and parcel one of the reasons why she won is just because she sold everything. She knows how to have a stage presence. She knows how to work all those outfits, even if it's just bandages wrapped around you. And the judges were so enamored with that, that I think that's one big reason why she got the win. So I think this episode really taps into something that you need to bring to the runway. It can't just be looks. You have to be able to sell that garment as they do at Club 69 every single night at 2 a.m.
Yeah, she's very much like, and Evie Oddly has this too, the way they move on the runway cannot be discounted. It's not just the toe pointing thing. Okay, that's a gimmick. That's like the figure skaters that I watch who do like the quads and whatnot. That's a gimmick, okay? That's not the reality of what's going to happen normally. But the second way she presented it with the Enchantress and how she moved so limberly on the stage, it was so interesting. And she she has use that in other parts of RuPaul's Drag Race. And I feel like it's going to be something that she continues to use all the way to the end. And I'm really happy to see it because it makes watching them so much more fun.
All right, well, let's move to the opposite end of the sliding scale here. Making our way to New Jersey for Miss Arielle Versace, her swan song or syringe song, as it were.
Can I talk about this one first? I'm sorry.
Oh, you go ahead.
All right, because I just talked, but then I want to talk about Arielle. So here's the thing. I love the first look. I think the first look is freaking great. I don't know what the fuck Michelle is talking about with the bottom was ill-fitting. What are you talking about? You mean the part where her legs come out is ill-fitting? What the hell does that mean? I didn't understand that at all. I went back and watched it a second and third time to find, okay, she says the bottom's ill-fitting. Where is that at? I could not for the life of me see it. I think this was great. With the little blood running out underneath the peplum of the skirt, and then all of these needles sticking out was just so well done. And some of them were kind of droopy and some of them were kind of erect. That combined with her makeup, also the blood around the neckline and the bosom and the cinchness of it all was probably the best she's ever looked on RuPaul's Drag Race. But then she has two terrible looks with I agree with Michelle on this one, Saloon Girl. She tried to say it was like Meryl Streep and Miley Cyrus. Yeah. What?
Miley Cyrus and Can't Be Tamed. Avant-garde was what she used.
I mean, there's nothing avant-garde about this, like Michelle said. And the last one is so boring. I don't even mind the fact that it isn't a monster, except for they brought it up, except for the fact that it's boring to me. She just looks like a mermaid. There's nothing at all interesting about this. She just looks like a blue mermaid. Liana, you were not kidding when you said she had one in every color. I am literally stunned that that's what she came on Drag Race to do. Every freaking style of hair is this same big bouffant hair. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah, it's just so funny, the one in every color thing. I can't get over it. I think also you're gonna do a mermaid look when in the previous season, in season 10, they have the mermaid look challenge and they're like real mermaids and you see what Aquaria can do with that, you know? So yeah, it's just like that should have been the costume, you know what I mean? Like that would have been so cool. Definitely.
I would have loved if she came out with the Asia O'Hara fish face on, I would have loved that.
Yeah. So good. Yeah.
It was too soon. Too soon.
I loved her. But yeah, I agree with Brent. I loved her first look. I don't know if it necessarily fit under like sexy trick-or-treater, though. I almost feel like I wish that could have been the last look and like the mermaid look could have been the sexy trick-or-treater.
I love it, though, because I don't know if this is purposeful, but she's like, I don't know if she's making a reference to the fact that like so much shit can be found in kids' candy nowadays, like needles and razor blades. That's what I thought she was referencing.
Oh, no. Then she would have had like the razor blades and the, you know, I don't know what else is found in kids' candy, the handguns and whatnot.
I love the pun. You've heard of Monet Exchange. This is her cousin Needles Exchange. Yeah.
Love it. And yeah, the middle look was totally Saloon Girl. Like, I'm sorry. What part of this is which?
It was one of the worst looks on the runway, that Saloon Girl thing. I thought it was terrible.
One of my favorite things was in her What You Packed. She said, oh yeah, you know, I made wigs for Trixie Mattel, which maybe she was a little pissed why Trixie didn't give her the win in the mini challenge. And she says, oh, which ones? And it was the two big pink wigs that Trixie wore in All Stars 3. So it's basically like, if you look at a big pink wig on RuPaul's Drag Race, I think it's fair to say maybe a 70% chance it's going to be Arielle Versace's.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, obviously, she has a gig, and we'll talk about her elimination, but I did feel bad for her.
All right, let's round the bend here with our last couple. Moving on to Evie Oddly. I know, Brent, you said last week, like, one of the reasons why you felt maybe Evie didn't win last week is because this was the Monster Ball. This was hers to lose. I think she knew this was hers to lose, and she didn't win. What happened here?
I think she overthought. I think that this happened to Sharon Needles at 1.2. And I don't mean to compare them, but she is not Sharon Needles. She is something totally different, something totally interesting that I can't wait to get to know more of. But I do think she overthought the last look. Look, I'm going to be real. The first look, because of the way they edited it, I don't feel like I got the same presentation that the judges got. They were just howling over this. And I think it's the fact, again, they're bored. They've seen it all. This is season 11. They've done 4 All-Stars. They've seen everything on the runway. So when you do something like put claws on pumps, I mean, that is something they're going to go like, oh, she put claws on pumps, because everything else about it looks really cheap to me. Like, this looks like really cheapy, like trick-or-treater kid's costume. She said it was a kid's costume. She wasn't lying. I'm glad she's owning that, because it does look cheap, but she presented it so well and with so much personality that I feel like it won them over. Like, they were like, Elvira was talking about it, it was like the top 10 things she's seen on RuPaul's Drag Race, and I didn't quite get that, but I thought it was fun, but it did look cheap to me, and I can understand why other people thought it was not great necessarily. The second look to me was, to me, all about how she moved. She came out on the runway, and I don't know if you guys remember this, but she came out backwards.
She walked,
yeah, she walked backwards, and then she, like, turned around slowly to reveal this weird witchy look, and it did read totally witch to me, and she moved very much like Brooklyn, like a dancer on the runway. Something interesting that the judges respond well to, I feel like, is movement, and I feel like that's what really kept her in the top here. And I, by the way, what I said last week, I do think is true. The judges knew she was going to be a favorite for this. She knew she was going to be a favorite for this. I think the judges wanted to give her the win because they didn't give her the win last week and she really deserved it. And then she blew it in the third look. This was terrible. Rue was right in that she has a great body. She can do glam if she wants to. But I don't know what was monster about this. I didn't get the thing with the diamonds and the teeth or whatever she was.
I'm pretty sure they were googly eyes, maybe? What? I thought they were googly eyes.
Because she had her teeth.
Yeah.
All right. Well, whatever. Whatever it was. It was like, it was a mess. I didn't even like the beat. And it's hard for me to dislike a beat of somebody like Evie Oddly. But it wasn't good. It felt very cheap, very dated. Very, very everything that Evie is not. I'm actually shocked at how bad it is now that I look at it again. It was a total miss. There's no way the judges could have awarded her the win. I guess they could have done like a Shea Goulet thing where, like, I think Shea, I can't remember what it was. It was near the end where she had one look that didn't go the right way and they called her out for it. But then RuPaul was like, you know, should we give her the win based on these other two looks? Because, you know, we get the children in Harlem who are, like, wanting to, like, you know, be really wowed by something. And she was, like, and then they ended up giving Shea Coulee. Oh, yeah, I remember what it was. It was, like, the rainbow dress or something that they didn't, like, it didn't read as rainbow or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. But she also did, like, that construction worker outfit that I remember. They were, like, should we not put her in the bottom because of that? Because it was so pretty.
Yes, yes, yes. They love that. But I thought that was one they liked, was the construction worker app. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is Evie. I thought she did great for the first two looks. The first one, again, I felt like we were robbed a little bit of the presentation because of the editing of it. But I understand they have to make choices and whatever. So, Leon, I'm curious to see what you think about Evie and if you think that she did herself. Let me say one more thing. I don't think she did herself a disservice here because I feel like she owned her shit on the runway enough where she explained it and it didn't sound like it was an excuse. It sounded like the judges were like, okay, like I feel like Rue was like, okay, I get what you were trying to do, but like lean into the curve a little bit. You know what I mean? Like give us, you know what you are. Stop trying to deny what you are. And I don't feel like that's going to be a problem moving forward. What did you think?
I think Evie is going to be fine. I don't think that's going to be an issue. I think her second look, I mean, hands down my favorite. I thought it was so cool. It was definitely so cool. With the wig, the hat, and the contacts, I thought really made it something super cool. It was I mean, it was like pretty stereotypical witchy, I think, but with the like dread things with the wig, I don't know. For some reason, that just made it really unique for me. I had no idea what the judges were thinking for the first look. This is the biggest thing for me that I was like, I do not get this judging criteria at all. It must have been a you should have been there type moment that, you know, like you said, Brown, yeah. with the editing, like it just didn't come across because I was like, this looked I hated it. I hated it. I don't even care wow. that she put the little things in the pot, like on her pumps. And I love Evie. I love Evie. And this for me was just like, I don't get it. I thought that the criteria was supposed to be a sexy trick-or-treater. If I was going out as a sexy trick-or-treater stomping around like that, I don't know. I didn't connect with it. Something about it just didn't sit with me. And then the last look, I mean, awful. Like, there's nothing else to say. But I love Evie and I'm rooting for her, but I just really did not like two of her three looks.
I think part of the problem is that the sequins on the first look are like they're really big, and thus it comes off as a little aerobic-y. Like she looks like an aerobics instructor, kind of. Yeah, Mike. Okay, what's going on? What do you feel? Because you went oh when Liana said she absolutely hated this look.
I love the first look.
Okay,
it made me laugh, and honestly, none of the other first looks made me laugh, and I think that's sort of why I really enjoyed it because look. If you have been listening to me talk about RuPaul's Drag Race for the past 5 seasons or so, you know that fashion is not my area of expertise. I am all about performance and telling a story, and I feel like Evie was able to sell it. Even stupid things like dropping the mask and not being able to pick it up because she had T-Rex arms and then shrugging her shoulders and continuing. It's chintzy, it's stupid, but it's a character. And I feel like if we're trying to take Trampy Trick-or-Treater as here's a trick-or-treater's typical outfit, an outfit that a child would wear, and we're going to try to make it sexy. She did it in a funny way, and I really enjoy that over someone who's just, you know, picked a sexy outfit in general. I would enjoy this more than Scarlet Envy's, like, hey, this is an outfit that everyone sort of wears, and I glammed it up a bit. This is totally unconventional, and it's weird, and I think this is one of the most Evie Oddly outfits out of the three. Though I do agree with you. I think the stuff she did, particularly with her face, her eyes, her hair, it was very like Storm from X-Men realness with the witch. And it was all about the presentation. Her reveal of the face at the bottom of the runway, I think, was a fantastic yes. choice considering how much gets lost upstage. Yeah, this third one, I can understand where she was coming from. You know, she does not want to get, it's almost the opposite of Plastic Tira. She does not want to get pigeonholed. She doesn't want to be just considered the weird one. She wants to show that she can step out of her box a bit. But I think what was outside of her box was not the best. Like, I think Michelle had a great reaction when she said, I want to be glamorous. And Michelle says, this is what you consider glamorous? The dress was just she tried to walk that fine line and she just landed right on top of it and ended up hurting herself. I appreciated what she was doing with like the frog hands in her hair, the button over her eye. I wanted to see more of that. Maybe if she incorporated more of like a patchwork like thing into her dress to evoke more of a doll like feeling while trying to make it sexy. I'm not entirely sure, but I agree with you both. She seemed to vocally say, this is what I was going for. Clearly it didn't work. And even the judges were very giving and saying, all right, basically next time, you know, be couture if we ask for you to be couture. Otherwise just keep doing you. And I feel like she's smart enough. She's going to take her advice and move on there. But I really enjoyed her this episode. I think outside of one major slip up, I think she met those high expectations that were, you know, raised for her considering the the description of this challenge.
I was going to say, because like you said something that I laughed as myself, and then I was like, oh, I need to laugh like Evie Oddly, which is
Elvira's going to put him in like her studio audience to just laugh along to her because she has that laugh.
Is it like it's like a little bit like Fat Albert to me, like that kind of.
Well, no, it's a little Monique Hart with like the.
Oh, it's a Monique Hart. Okay, yeah, there's Monique Hart. Yeah,
it's definitely in that realm. That well, yeah. let's end things on a bit of a bum note because let's talk about Dr. Silky Ganache and her trip down to the bottom three this week. Liana, what did you make? Silky said herself, this is going to land me in the bottom. It's a prediction that turned out to be correct. Was it warranted in your opinion?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to see if there's anybody else that I would have put back here. I mean, I think maybe Raja would have been the one that I could have swapped out for Silky, because I didn't find like her first outfit that bad. I kind of got the critiques that it was like, oh, I guess it's more of like a kid's costume than like a sexy costume. But then like Evie is literally wearing a kid's costume, so I don't like quite get that. Her middle outfit was just Oprah. Like, I get that she was going for the Wiz, but, and this goes into her whole thing about like, oh, I only have one beat. So I guess your beat is Oprah. Like, that's your mug. And then, you know, I thought that the last look actually wasn't that bad. So maybe it wasn't monster enough, I guess. I don't really remember exactly what the critiques were. Yeah, but I don't know. Like, okay, so if her monster was a miss, then I guess she needed to have the makeup the plastic tiara had, and then she would have been a monster. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently.
I mean, that's all plastic tiara did.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, she should have got, like, she said that I painted a different mug for this, and I feel like she should have painted something even more different to get it more towards monster and less like, you know, Satan's secretary or something. I don't know. Look, I think the first look to me, I love a big girl, but this does not look flattering on her at all. Not even in a, you know, big girl kind of sexy way. I feel like there needs to be some sort of shape here, and not the shape that she's giving me. It needs some sort of cinching or some sort of padding to give it a little bit of a more flattering shape to her, because I didn't like this at all. Also, the horn is really flaccid, and that doesn't ever read well on RuPaul's Drag Race. But I did enjoy the colors of it all. It did read very trick-or-treater to me, and I enjoyed that. And it also did, as the virus said, it's very kid but very sexy. All those two things never should go together. So secondly, I have watched The Wiz. I love The Wiz. I did not get The Wiz from this until she told me, and then I was like, oh, okay. And then I looked at Eveline again, and I'm like, yeah, it's not Eveline. You're just saying you're Eveline because you're wearing a dress that's sort of similar, and you're black. That's the only reason you look like Eveline in your head is because of those two things, because the beat isn't right. You don't look evil. Nothing else about it is right. It doesn't look like Eveline. And the last look is just not a monster. So I was glad she wasn't lip syncing, but she definitely deserved to be in the bottom.
Yeah, this was, I agree that I think the first look, a little too simple for me. You know, I can't exactly speak out of both sides of my mouth considering I said that Evie was one to really take this childlike concept and turn it into something at least aspiring to be sexy. And it seemed like Silky was trying to do a similar thing here, but especially considering that only two seasons ago we had a unicorn-themed runway, that paled in comparison to what was put out there. There could have been a lot more going on. The second look, I love The Wiz. Movie version, not so much, but you know what? It's still pretty good. And especially doing the comparison side by side to Mabel King's Eveline is just, it's night and day. This could have been a great opportunity for her to really sort of pull a Scarlet and just hag herself to bits.
Yes.
You know, like cover herself in makeup and boils. And I was a little disappointed by the dress because the dress was not nearly as decorated enough as the Eveline from what we saw.
Everything about it was half-assed, Mike. And here's the shitty part, Liana, is that this is the thing she brought from home. Like, this is the thing they said, okay, we're going to do Witch. And she said, okay, I'm going to do this. And she told them, I'm going to do Eveline. And they said, okay, no one else is doing Eveline, so you can do Eveline. That's how for those of you who don't know, that's what they do. Like, they give you all of the possible runways that are going to come up. They don't tell you what order or what's real, all of the gory details, but they tell you that. And you have to send in what you're going to do, and then they tell you if that's okay, because they don't want, like, five different people on the runway doing whatever. I know they do that now after the geisha thing happened, or the Madonna thing, or whatever the hell happened on RuPaul's Drag Race. You basically have to give them a concept of what you're doing, and they say, okay, especially for characters, you can do that, because they don't want a bunch of repeats on the runway. And, Mike, this was just so half-assed. It really was.
And I think the problem, one of the things that really stuck out to me was the way she was walking. She was swinging her hips till daylight come, and in doing that, she exposed a bit of the bottom of the hoop skirt, which is never great. And so I definitely caught on to that, and that docked a few points in my mind. And this final look, it's fine. Again, I'm always grateful for this pop of color in this very dark, macabre sense of Halloween with these challenges. not particularly sure, like Suga, what she was doing with a skull. I guess a skull equals Halloween. I wish there was some sort of stuff she could dress up, you know, to make it even more devil-esque than just wearing a red dress. Because I feel like the top, the face and the horns were doing it for me. I could see what she was going with, but everything else was just sort of, I guess the face was monster. The rest was, you know, monster I'd like to freak. And it didn't necessarily balance out properly. So all that being considered, again, I thought there was a chance she would have been in the bottom two because I loved Suga's witch look. But I guess the unfortunate aesthetic behind Suga's other two looks just greatly outbalanced the mistakes that Silky made here. I'm intrigued. Liana, this is Silky's first time in the bottom. Evie sort of outlines this before, that she thinks she can get by with her personality. She was able to get out of the bottom too, but this earned, you know, she landed in the bottom right after winning a challenge. Do we think that Silky's going to, you know, take their comments and recover from this? Do you expect a general recovery from Silky following this?
Yeah, I got very Shangela vibes when Evie was talking about Silky. Like, Evie was like, oh, she can't ride her personality to the end. I feel like that's sort of similar to what Raja was saying about Shangela in season 3, was that, oh, you know, she's has an amazing personality, but, you know, her looks are really crunchy. And I wonder about that with Silky, because I feel like Silky has been able to turn better looks than, you know, OG Shangela. I think that it's not going to be as bumpy of a ride for Silky as the edit or maybe Evie thinks it might be.
Yeah, I think, Brent, you made a good point earlier that this, I'm assuming we're going to get another sort of design challenge in the top 5 or 6. That's when, you know, they did the ball challenge early last season and then they had that weird sort of evil twin thing at the top 5. I feel like we're going to get something like that, but until then, it's probably going to be very performance-based, and not only is Silky a good performer, she's smart, and gosh darn it, people like her. So I feel like this is something she can recover from, and if we're talking about the overall story of Silky Nutmeg Ganache, I feel like this is an important point in it where they can say, like, she was down and out, but now she rallied like a phoenix and recovered to, you know, make her way into the finale.
Mm. She's crystallized now.
Yeah, exactly. She fell into Nina's flame dress and has been able to make her way back up. Let's talk about the lip sync here. Let's talk about Ariel versus Sugarcane singing or lip syncing to Whitney Houston's I'm Your Baby Tonight. And wow, Liana, who would have thought twice, 2 seasons in a row, someone would take a spill on the main stage?
Oh my God, she fell so hard. I felt terrible for her. It was actually funny because then when I watched Untucked after, they kind of show her like stepping on the fabric, like when she's practicing lip syncing. So it was like some, I was going to say reverse foreshadowing, but that's not a thing. Right. I felt really terrible for her, but I felt that Sugarcane really just embodied the song. Although, yeah, apart from the fall, I don't know, I didn't think that Ariel did all that bad. So this was a situation for me where I assumed that Ariel was going to go home if I had to pick a horse, but I really wasn't 100% sure which way it could have gone. But because of the way Suga embodied the song, that's why I thought she was probably going to stay.
Yeah, see, I wasn't sure. And also, no offense, but they really made her fall look way worse than it was, because it happened like in a split second. She fell and she quickly she didn't even blink. If you just like watch it without paying attention to the editing showing it like 3 times and in slow motion, she fell and she quickly just turned over and kept lip syncing. Like, it was barely noticeable at all. I do think that they sort of used that as the reason why she got eliminated, but I don't think it was necessarily fair. I thought she did actually a really like better than serviceable job here, better than Suga did, and I would have had Ariel staying just based on the lip sync, but I do feel like RuPaul was bored by Ariel Versace, and I don't feel like she's bored by Sugarcane yet. And so I do feel like that, given that their lip syncs were pretty close, and I think even fans of Sugarcane would tell you that the lip sync was pretty close. I think that's the reason why she ultimately did stay.
Yeah, I think they both did a pretty good job, fall aside. I think that Suga did a nice job in terms of, it really felt like, aside from the accidental stunt, this was a lip sync where there were no stunts. You know, Ariel tried to do a couple of little back bends on the ground.
It was great.
But I feel like otherwise, I think Suga did a really good job of just like, she walked maybe, 10 steps during that lip sync, but she did a good job.
Just
planting her feet and really selling it. I totally agree with you, both of you. I thought this was pretty close, even considering the fall. I think they're both good performers. Did Ariel do a bit too much choreography-y stuff right before the fall. Maybe that's the universe telling her, like, be natural, bitch. But, you know, I think that Ariel at least... It's weird to say that she ended up, you know, falling in the lip sync, but I think she went out with her head held high, all things mm-hmm. considered, because I thought she did at least a pretty good job here. I'd say, you know, considering the losing lip sync performances we've had the past few episodes, this might be the best of the five.
Yes, yeah. I think I would agree with that, because I would, like I said, I would have had her staying based on lip sync alone. I thought she did a really wonderful job. I don't know if you want to talk about her actual elimination.
Go ahead, Brent. Do you want to eulogize her a bit to put the tombstone on her head, steal it from Vanjie?
I think that she took Bianca Del Rio's advice that, you know, you can wear the same dress for every freaking episode of RuPaul's Drag Race and win. And she applied it to her wig, and she thought that that was going to save her, and she could possibly win RuPaul's Drag Race wearing the same damn wig out there on the runway every week. But no, you can't do that. And it really got boring really fast, to the point where, like, the first two episodes, if you go back and listen to this podcast, I was living for Ariel. I was loving her. I was like, oh, and she's feisty too. She's serving it to a Silky, and Silky's giving it back to her. This could be a fun rivalry. But then she petered out so fast, to the point where I was like, what? Really bored by her. And I do feel like she was unfairly maligned this episode. Again, Michelle's hypocrisy drives me crazy with her monster, no monster, insofar as her and Brooklyn go. But it really hurt when she was eliminated. She you could just hear it in her voice. She doesn't want people to feel like she's a fraud, because I think she probably gets criticized for that a lot. I'm sure a lot of drag queens who have less followers than her like to say behind her back, or in comments, or subtweet her in other places, that she's a fraud. And she feels like that getting eliminated in the fifth episode of RuPaul's Drag Race might lend a little credence to that. But I do not feel like that at all. In fact, I think this lip sync really helped her show that she is not a fraud. She is a seasoned drag queen. She knew how to perform. And also, she was really, really lovely. I mean, everything about her was great. And even the time she did get into it with Silky, I feel like she was speaking for the audience, and that we were sick of Silky at the time that she was going off on her. So I really hope she can hold her head up high. I think she'd be a fun candidate to bring back for an All-Stars. I'm already predicting that Raja's going to be eliminated soon. I think she would be fun too, because I do feel like they would learn from their mistakes. And I do feel like Ariel... and I've never learned if it was Ariel or Ariel, but I do feel like that Ms. Versace would come back with a different tack if she had the opportunity, and wouldn't start repeating the same silhouette of wig over and over and over again, Liana.
Yeah, my heart really did break for her when she was talking about, you know, the expectations of, you know, wanting to live up to being more than just a picture. And I think it was an Untucked when Akiria was sort of giving her this pump up talk. And I felt exact same way. Like, I wanted to say the same thing to her. Like, look in the mirror. This is not a picture. There are no filters here. And the fact that she did so well in the lip sync, I mean, she should be really proud. I know that she fell, but I mean, still, like, I thought that she, you know, did a good job. And I'm actually sad to see her go. I know it was a lot of samey, but I enjoyed her, and I, you know, I wish she'd stuck around for a little bit longer, but I think she'll be fine after. And I think if she can be confident and, you know, really believe in what she did, then I think she'll have a great career after.
I'm actually also really bummed that she got eliminated, Mike, because I wanted to see how many other challenges she could shoehorn that particular wig style into.
It would happen no matter what. I think that she could even be Trixie during Snatch Game and just use the wig that she gave her. I mean, hopefully she could take solace in the fact that Mayhem Miller was eliminated in episode 5 as well last season. So maybe that's just sort of like, you know, sometimes queens don't do too well in the drag race scenario. And she did okay. I mean, she had a low during the Why Gotta Be Black Panther challenge with her girl stuff. She actually, I thought she was a pretty good highlight. Her and Silky did really well in that church challenge from episode 3. That might have been a personal high for her, but it's so interesting, Brett, that you bring up the Bianca Del Rio thing, because sort of what I would compare it to, because I think people are saying, you know, oh yeah, this person won because they were able to do that. But it's an interesting thing in reality TV where when one person wins a show, whether it be meritocracy based like Drag Race or something like Big Brother or Survivor, if they win playing a certain way, usually you can't win by playing that way again. It reminds me of, like, not to go too much on a Survivor tangent, but like after Tony Vlachos won, people were like, oh yeah, I gotta play like Tony. I gotta play the Tony style. But like, nobody's gonna let that type of person get to the end anymore or win just because it's already happened before. I wonder if that's something happening with the judging as well, that they said, well, you know what? We had someone win before who was able to produce reliable, albeit consistent looks. We want versatility. And unfortunately, I don't think Ariel Versace, she was super consistent. You know, I sort of balk at Ross asking her, like, who are you? What place are you in drag? Because I think she had her nose on the aesthetic probably the most out of any 100. Of these queens. Mm-hmm. It was the same, but she knew exactly who she was, and she had one of the biggest viewpoints coming into the series. But I think that unfortunately, the judges are looking for things that pop more and surprise them more, and they weren't surprised by her. And so, unfortunately, she went here. But yeah, my heart did go off her, especially with how forlorn she was watching her and Untucked really pack things up. I hope that she has such a loyal following that I really do not think people are trashing her. It really seems like, from what I've been hearing, she's gotten so much support on social media. So hopefully this has pushed her farther along as well and making her realize that she's not just an Instagram queen. She is someone who can do this. She only went 5 episodes, but that's a third of the season. And that is nothing to balk at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's freaking 15 queens on this freaking season. So like, girl, you did great. She shouldn't feel bad at all, Liana. I was really, really bummed when she was crying, like almost in Untucked. And when she was by herself and reading the letters and whatnot. And I feel like there's a piece of me that was like, I said this before, like I identify with her in some way. It's because the younger me looks sort of similar to her. And I get where she's coming from. But I wanted her to succeed and feel great about what she did. You got onto RuPaul's Drag Race. You've been on 5 episodes. You've had some memorable moments. You had a great lip sync. Like, what more can you ask for except get to the crown and win? It was really, really great. So hold your head up, girl.
All right, well, let's move on to next week. I can't believe this. We are going to the Draglympics. Liana, all I had blaring in my head was Cheerleading Challenge Part 2. I don't know what the Draglympics will entail. Frankly, I'm a little scared. I'm even more scared than I was by the Monster Ball.
That's actually, yeah, okay, great. Now that you brought up the cheer thing, I'm much more nervous for this next week. I actually thought that it was, well, I guess with the, okay, so I had, when they said Drag Olympics, I had this preconceived idea of what it meant. It was like, you have to perform tasks that are essential to being a drag queen. So, talk in a certain amount of time, do what, you know, like, whatever the series of events are, and then that was going to be the challenge. But based on the promos, it does not seem to be like that. So I don't know if it's like learning choreography and being able to present. Are there going to be multiple events? I don't know how this is going to work, but I'm intrigued.
I wish it could be like the Laugh Olympics, where like they have like a villain team, and that Raja O'Hara could be on that with Silky.
Yeah, we need the really rottens of Drag Race.
Yeah, that's where Raja and Silky would be. Like the Dream Girls would be the really rottens. I don't know if Vanjie would be there, but yeah.
So we shall see. One more thing I want to bring up before we finish off this episode. I know it's a bit of a long one, but in Untucked, Nina West talked a bit about her story last week, both in the mirror talk and especially to the cameras in her confessional. This week, she opened up a bit more about it and made a point to say specifically that, you know, her story is not unlike what is happening to our trans brothers and sisters out there today. And I just wanted to bring it up because on the day we're recording this, March 31st, it is International Trans Day of Visibility. So I would say encourage all of you to, you know, get on the internet, find local trans organizations or trans individuals in your area that you want to support, because I think Nina makes a fantastic point that we've come a long way, but we've got so much farther to go, especially in the trans community. So I just wanted to point that out. And yeah, it was, you know, I was sad to miss out on you guys talking about it last week, but it was heartbreaking to hear Nina's story again one more time. But I think she made a fantastic point how she almost needed to tell this story because there are people out there, people who are watching this show, who need to know about that history, who are lucky now to grow up in a time when this, you know, when they're able to be afforded more rights than they were back in the day. So I just wanted to say that. Anything else from you two about this big old episode before we move on?
Like, not even just people in the United States and in civilized countries who have more freedom to be out and proud, if, you know, whatever part of the queer community you're a part of. People in Brunei are being, you know, going to be stoned to death or whipped to death, whichever, take your pick, if you're caught doing, quote unquote, homosexual acts. So not everybody in the world has freedom. And so I was glad that they continue to bring this up. Also, we have a non-binary contestant on Big Brother Canada, even though Big Brother Canada is driving me crazy. I am loving the fact.
Is that the reason why you were pissed at Brooklyn this episode, Brent? Are you taking out all your Canada rage on Brooklyn?
No. I love the Canadians. The Canadians just don't love me. That's all. All the alumni. But I think that it's great that we have more visibility, and I love the fact that the show's talking about it. Of course, Kira from Big Brother Canada is non-binary, not trans, but it's all under the same umbrella of people who are deserving of rights and freedom. And just like everything else that everybody else takes for granted, and many of them don't have it, it's our job as people who are a little bit more privileged, or a lot more privileged in some of our cases, to talk about it and bring visibility to it. And so I'm glad the show is also doing that.
And I'm happy that they were able to use Untucked for that, because otherwise it would have been real boring. So, like, at least if you're going to have a boring Untucked, like, use it as a platform to, like, spread. Because otherwise, like, my lord. Ugh.
By the way, really quickly, and I know we're going long today, but we have 33 looks, so that's the reason why. RuPaul, that outfit, I loved it. I know some people didn't respond well to that outfit that RuPaul wore, but I love the color. It just made me smile. And when I watch drag, I just want to smile half the time. God damn, she made me smile. I love it. The purple and the yellow and the blue of it all. I just thought it was an interesting come. Something like, it was like a pantsuit. I've never seen her in something like that before. So I really, really, it wasn't literally a pantsuit, but it had the same kind of silhouette. So there was that, and I feel like I was missing something else. But anyway, I'm excited for next week. I don't think it's going to be as bad as the cheerleading challenge. I think it's just going to be a little bit more lip syncy and less physical. And hopefully the show has learned their lesson, Mike.
Yeah, unless, I don't know, maybe they slept out a lot for preemptive medical bills this season. Maybe they'll have a doctor on set. Maybe they'll be one of the guest judges. We shall see next week. I am really loving this season so far. And I'm a fan of season 10, but I'm even liking this more than season 10. Between the challenges, the queens especially, there's just been a lot that's been so, so good. And I cannot wait to keep on keeping on with the season.
You know, Liana, where I'm coming from is that I feel like... I didn't feel like this during season 10. I feel like A Star Is Born in season 11 with Evie Oddly, because I didn't feel like this during season 10. I mean, Aquaria won. She's a fantastic queen, but I was never like, I never thought of her as a star. She turns fantastic looks and she knew how to do the challenge as well, but I never responded to her necessarily in confessionals. Her personality can be a little bland sometimes. I'm sorry, it can. I think, you know, every other queen, like Cameron, they didn't wow me. You know, the whole Eureka of it all, we were bored by the end. And Asia O'Hara, you know, with the dead butterflies. So I feel like this season is more of a revelation in terms of, like, we're possibly, like Mike said earlier, seeing a march to the end of a particular queen, like Bob the Drag Queen or Bianca Del Rio. I'm trying to think of anybody else who, like, just marched to the end.
You could argue Sharon a bit, even though there was some debate as to whether Fifi or Chad would win over her.
Yeah. That was a little different because I feel like Chad could, but I that's why I feel like she was brought back for All Stars.
This does feel very much like Bob the Drag Queen, like that. Not that they are the same queen, obviously, but like it's. I feel like it's going to be a similar progression, and I mean, I'm not mad at it. Also, my timer's going to go off for my slow cooker. That's how long we've been talking. Can we wrap this up, please?
All right, Liana's got to eat. It's time for dinner. Follow all these lovely individuals on Twitter. Brent is at OneLuckyGayONE. Liana is at Liana Boris. I am at a Mike Bloom type. Let us know all your thoughts about these lurks moving forward. We have a lot to get into next week moving forward. Thank you all so much for listening. But for now, you may sashay away and eat dinner. Bye!